And welcome to episode 225 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dastardly Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the thing from another world known as Tony Esmond.
Oh, I thought I was going to get a cool middle name, a bit like Stan the Soapbox. Oh, it's good to be here. Hello, yeah. Hello, Vince. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Wait, Stan Soapbox, that wasn't his middle name, though.
But when he used to talk about people, didn't he, in there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what would it be then, Dan? What would Tony's middle name be?
Put me on the spot now. Tony Bloom, not Esmond.
Oh, no. Yeah. People might find that out.
Not funny when you put me on the spot. Forever.
You are always funny, Daniel. Always.
Yeah. This entire show is scripted.
Another one is, and we're not allowed to talk about it.
Which one's that?
One Dan might have been on.
Oh,
yes.
Yes. I cannot wait for that. That's going to be good. Are we going to shout that out later?
Yeah, when he goes live.
Yeah. Why not? Anyway, this week, we're recording early again because as we speak, Tony has just gotten back from MCM London. Yeah. You survived, Tony. How do you feel?
Very tired and a little bit emotional.
There you go. And that's probably actually true.
Yeah, it will be. And I'll give a full run. I'll give my MCM breakdown. I only found out today that the bloke I've been dealing with for ages about MCM is left the company. I don't know why.
And you're still in touch with him? Right. You probably want to stop that email chain.
No, I know. I hope he didn't read my emails.
Has he asked to meet you at like the services or something?
Send her that 50 quid for the covering fee.
Well, I said, don't forget I've got that third badge. You said you'd give me a third badge for free. Oh, did we? No, you're going to have to pay for that. It's like that. That's no wonder he left. I thought I'd be after him. Anyway, got two guests on the show. Sorry about that.
Yes, we do. Because it's the Halloween episode this week. As you can tell from the intro music, which I haven't picked out yet, but it's significantly spooky, probably.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, it's always a bit different this time of year. And this time of year, we like to focus a show on like horror comics and just generally stuff like that. And we've got some questions from listeners, but we've also got two wonderful guests. They've just sort of appeared on our radar and now become one of the inner circle already. It's our pleasure to welcome Damien and Helena from Art92 Studios. Hello.
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 Hey guys,
that was a very professional hello. When you hear the outtakes, at the end of the show, you'll realise how unprofessional we all are.
Just forget about rhubarb and custard for the intro music.
Dog-centric.
Thank you very much for joining us this week, guys.
Thank you.
And obviously. You know your horror as well, because we did talk about your book Pre-Mortis just a couple of weeks ago. It's just sort of pretty much fresh off the printers as well, isn't it? How long has it been out now as we speak?
What do we about? A month, 2 months, something like that?
Yeah,
did you do the launch in Nottingham though, wasn't it? Or was it Leamington?
It was Leamington.
Well, it was going to be Nottingham as the main one, but we were so good at getting to the printers, we actually had it at Leamington. So
yes. Right.
Yeah. We got ahead of ourselves a little bit.
Did a soft launch.
We did indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. H likes a soft one now and then.
It's the harder the soft option. As a pet shop boy, indeed.
Jesus.
Yeah. I get that at work whenever kind of like, we're going to do a soft launch on it. So what, you're not going to do any work then?
That's my middle name, soft launch. Yeah. So I think I'm quite offended by that.
That's your porn name.
Yes, folks, it's going to be that kind of week. it's going to be a lot of fun. And do you know what else is fun?
Comic House.
Yes. Our lovely sponsor, Comic House. This is a midweek recording, so I don't have the sort of built up sort of script in front of me for a normal Comic House script. What am I talking about? It's just nonsense. Anyway, yes, Comic House are our sponsor. Every week they support us, and they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. I'm actually wearing their shirt as we speak. I just suddenly realised that.
Oh, that's
their hat.
Yeah, you're wearing their hat?
Yeah.
Is that all you're wearing?
I can't wait for it to get cold enough to me start wearing that beanie hat.
I like the beanie hat. That's your favourite hat, Vince, you told me.
Yeah, I do love that hat. I've worn it too much, though.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be cold to wear a beanie hat, does it, Dan?
Really?
For me, it does, yeah.
I just care about your hair too much. That's what it is, isn't it?
We're not as metal as you, Vince. You know that. Yeah.
Oh, fucking A, bro. Fucking A.
Vince was a fucking A. Right
up. I am.
Was that metal or mental? I've got a bad line here.
But both. I'm both as fuck. Anyway, anyway, back to Comic House, who are also metal as fuck. Yes, they are our sponsor. God bless them for putting up with these ads every week. And on the website itself, there's a huge selection of titles on there. Lots of self-published creators put their comics up there, and you can go online. It's another marketplace if you want to buy your indie comics. Maybe if you can't get to conventions, it's another avenue to buy those books. But we talk about it every week, and they have their own app, which is brilliant. It's like Netflix for comics. It's like a subscription service for only £3 a month. You get access to an enormous library of comics that's always being updated. But what's on there at the moment, Dan?
Well, the featured print indie comics for sale. We've got Ting Budong, which I wanted to read. It's an awkward adventure in China. Digitopia 1, Flintlock 3, The High Priestess Volume 1, Iron Wolf 3. If you're looking for a Halloween comic, City of Lost Souls Volume 2 by James McCulloch. That's very dark. Toothpick Issue 1, The Formidable 3, The Catalyst, and Peace of Mind Issue 2.
Yes.
These are many more available.
We're number one on the site this week.
Are we?
Yeah.
Blimey.
Look at that money rolling in. Thought bubble, here we come.
Yeah. Although, if you are an indie creator, then it benefits you to sign up for Comic House.
It does.
And, set up a profile. It's easy enough to do. And if you've got some old comics sitting around, or if you've got some new comics that you just want to get out to a larger audience, put it on Comic House. Because seriously, it people check it out, and, you will get money for it. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. It's a brilliant site. And we love them, and they put up with us. So that's always good.
Yes, and Pete's good.
You can sell your print copies through there as well.
Yeah,
just hollow there.
Yeah.
So you can upload it digitally. Also have print copies, and people buy it through the site. I think Pete takes a minimal fee for doing that, and on it goes. So it's a good shout for that.
Yeah.
So I've got to say, actually, it is really good. I mean, I'd kind of seen the adverts for it and never actually sort of subscribed or anything. Then when you guys obviously. You started talking about it. I checked it out, and it is good. It is really good, actually. It's really good stuff on there, isn't there? I was amazed by how much stuff is actually available,
Yes. So,
and we're hoping to get on there at some point.
Good idea.
You should. Yeah, you'll do well. You do well.
If you can make a PDF of your comic, you can get it on the site. Yeah. It's really...
It's as simple as that. So, everyone apart from Tony, it's as simple as that. So, if you want to find out more, and you can have a 14-day free trial of the app just to see what we're talking about, then go to comichouse.com. There you go. That is as far as I've got in terms of notes and scriptage for this week.
No, we've got questions.
I know we've got questions, but I'm just saying,
sometimes you speak to me, I just feel like I'm being told off. About once every episode.
Sometimes I speak to you, and I actually just wonder to myself why I do it.
No, take that back.
Now I love you. I love you with the power of a thousand suns. You know that.
To be fair, though, Tony, at least you can speak to him. Because, I mean, I tried about four or five times on Saturday at Nottingham. I tell you. Just wasn't there. I was up and down them stairs like a bride's nightie. And no point was he there.
What do you mean? And then you actually ran into me under the stairs. So don't give me that.
How many times?
Listen up, pal.
I'm going to go and catch Vince.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, good luck with that.
Don't bring me into this.
Tell you what, Dan.
No, you're fine. Dan, you're fine, H. You're fine. But Damien, you're in my fucking house now. So you watch yourself.
Call him out for the top that he is. Come on.
This is what happened. Vince is very aggressive.
I know. There's no need. I'm just saying to Dan, you need to have a word with this guy there because he takes liberties, mate, when you're not there. He's off, schmoozing and, I nearly said a bad word.
But as Tony said on our last episode, I was stuck to my... why am I defending myself?
What, you stuck to him?
No, I was at my table most of the day until I realised that I needed to get some interviews or try and get some interviews. Yeah.
And you walked over to me and said, right, I've had enough, I'm going for a wander.
Why is that my voice?
That's my best impression of your voice.
He was getting shot by Nerf bullets as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The team.
Do you know what?
Don't mention the nerf again. It'll bring it up again.
I thought this show was going to be about horror. I didn't realise it was going to be my own personal horror.
Well,
this is not a podcast, an anxiety dream you're having.
While we're on the subject, another thing as well, I'm still disappointed about Leamington when you told me Dan was bringing the Coke and he turns up with six little mini cans. I thought, not the kind of party I was expecting, you know what I mean? And then I had to mini roll shame him. Because he was going to hog all the mini rolls until I actually, you know, kind of ended up with a pity roll out of him.
I think you thought that. I think you thought Leamington was going to be like his days at the Hacienda things.
Oh.
I think
I mean, contrary to popular belief, folks, we're not the new Motley Crue.
We're not even new Happy Mondays.
Yeah. You know.
Spinners?
Yeah. Osmonds.
You're only saying spinners because I accused you of looking at Val Dunican today.
Oh, I've had a terrible day today.
Do you know what? Val Dunican?
I wore
just short
a lovely
rocking
polar
chair.
Neck under a nice wool jacket, and I thought I was rocking the geography teacher look.
Yeah.
And all day, Val Dunican. That's all I got.
Val Dunican, yeah.
Who's Val Dunican?
I knew somebody was going to say I'm showing my age now.
Yeah. I shouldn't have brought that Labrador with me. That was where I went wrong.
Back to that.
But like a kind of a white turtleneck that a big chunky jumper that I wore. And someone said, you look like a submarine commander. And I've never...
Das Jana.
Das Butcher.
Here he comes.
People can be mean.
People can be mean, and normally, people can be mean. It's normally those people that I invite onto this show.
Clear it up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But yes, this week is obviously our Halloween timed episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we've done this every year, haven't we? Around this time.
We love a horror comic. Don't
yeah, we? Yeah, we love a horror comic, and there's especially in the Indian small press scene. It's a genre that's getting. Like bigger all the time, isn't it? With lots of different types of horror books as well, and there's been some real sort of genuinely surprising and just creepy ones. Scary? Do we want to say scary? That might be something that we'll talk about.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, we've had got a few questions. So, but we might as well start with our lovely guests because they put out a two-story anthology, which is going to be continuing. There's going to be another issue of it. But what made you decide to make a sort of horror comic or something dark like that?
Sorry, I was going to wait and see if he said something first. I think we'd been to a couple of conventions and, you know, when you go around and you see other people's work and think, this work's really nice. You know, when these people are doing it, they're writing it, they're drawing it, they're getting it out there. And we thought, why can't we do this? You know, we've both got stories in us. We can both draw. Let's you know, think about doing it. And I know it's been one of Damien's ambitions to write and draw a comic. So we thought about it and we set about doing our own, essentially, one each. And we realised it was quite an endeavour to do something each. So we thought, why don't we, you know, get together, combine it, do two separate stories. And then we worked on that premise of having two separate stories. Mine was always going to be a standalone. And although I think Damien's initially was going to be a standalone, he decided that actually, because of how much he wanted to put into it, it was too big. So he's going to look at doing a continuation. So we got together, we went through numerous iterations of the story. And so and the good thing is we can critique each other's work as well, you know, without falling out, without getting divorced, you know, that's all. Okay. anyway.
You've got to stay together for the mortgage, haven't you?
You see, it's going to be hard work on my own, you know? so that's
Hello?
My take on
Hello?
That. That's my take on why we did it. And we both like the, you know, the horror genre in its different kind of forms. And, you know, that's why we did it. But I'll see if Damien's got another take on that.
Yeah, H made me do it.
Is that your final answer, isn't it?
No, like it said, you know, I mean, we'd kind of, I mean, we dropped out of art for about 20 years, both of us. You know, we just didn't do anything. And it was only about 3 years ago that we started thinking we need to do something like that we actually enjoy, you know, rather than just work and commuting. And at the time, I'd just finished being a counsellor. So that took all your spare time up and stuff. And we just kind of fell back into art, and it was like, you know, you're kind of a bit reserved about going back into it, thinking, oh, what if I'm shit now after all these years? And then we started just tinkering. It's like, oh, actually, you know, we've forgotten how much we love it. And yeah. Kind of grew from there. And then we started going to conventions. You know, I hadn't been to a convention in about probably 20-odd years, you know.
Okay.
And we went
what
to
was, ICE. What was the first convention you went to then? When you
when
got back came, to it?
When I got back, it was it would have been ICE in Birmingham in 2017, I think it would have been.
Quite recently.
Yeah. And I just forgot now how great it was. You know, I'd forgotten how brilliant it was. And then there was the 2000 AD 40th, the sort of March after. And went down to that, dragged H down to that, and that was pretty good. And then just did a few other sort of conventions after that. But you just forget how nice the community is. You know, we met people like John McRae, who's always got time for people, John Royal, you know, and all these other artists and creators, and Ryan Brown and everybody.
Okay.
Even people you'd heard of just had time for you. And you were like, Christ, you know, it really is as nice as I remember. And we kind of got the hankering to create again. And that kind of spun. And then, as H said, you know, we started looking at, because the small press world and the indie world is completely different to what I remember 20 odd years ago, when everything was like, you know, you had to photocopy it and staple it together if you were lucky and stuff. And now it's hard to tell some books apart from the, you know, from the main sort of distributors, isn't
can
it?
Be,
you know
can
what
it?
I mean?
Yeah,
oh,
it really can.
Some brilliant
yeah.
stuff out there.
And I tell you what, looking at the sales this week, some of the sales are blurred lines as well.
Really?
I'm glad that people are doing well. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you being a married couple though, that's I think you're the first married couple we've had on. Is that right, guys? I'm going to say.
Could be.
Yeah.
It's, we could also be the first divorce. You don't know yet. Yeah.
Give me a couple of hours, H.
So Dan and Vince aren't like in a civil partnership then?
No.
Misunderstood.
I'm just weird. They're in there.
Yeah. You ever had the first podcast romance? We've got to get that on the go.
Yeah. That'd be nice. And we haven't had one, have we? No. Nobody's met. Yeah. Anyway, so being husband and wife.
You can see why. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Romance Central, my friend. is that easier or harder or more? I was talking to Ian and Nicole from the Lakes podcast, and they obviously record a podcast, but they're a husband and wife, you know, they're partners. Mm. It seems strange to me. I don't know. I don't involve my partner's not involved in any of my hobbies, to be fair. You know, do you find it comes easily to the both of you? Is it
I think it does because we've got this commonality between us, because we've both been artists since we were little kids. We've always drawn. We haven't known each other since childhood, by the way, but we've always drawn. And then when we got together, we knew each other was an artist. And I think because we're kind of we've got empathy for each other's kind of work, and we know how hard it is, and we don't bicker about stuff. And the good thing is because we do have very separate very different styles. We're not competing against each other.
I was going to say a little bit of competitiveness. Do you think a little bit?
No, I'd like to think not. I think, you know,
you're probably the better one though, are you, H? Is that the?
Of course I am. Of course.
Do you know what? Do you know what really winds me up with this? Yeah. Right. I mean, by her own admission, she's not a comics fan.
No, I'm not being derogatory. I love comics. I'm just not a big comics reader. You know,
never worked digitally. Previously, she'd never done really anything digitally, never really read comics, blah blah blah. So we sit down and we decide that we're going to do a comic, and first of all H was going to write it and I was going to draw it, and then actually we decided, as she said, that it was quite an undertaking, so we decided, you know what, let's go for it. And it was a conversation where I said, you could do this, you know, just set some panels up and crack on. She finished her comic first. First strip before I did. I think it's better than mine anyway.
You're always going to say that, and I think
genuinely though. So from absolutely nothing to actually the strip, you know, the punch the puppy in Pre-Mortis is the first thing that H ever did digitally at all.
It is, yeah.
And the first comic strip she ever did. And do you know what? You got to tip your hat to that and go, bloody hell, you know. It's some achievement. So that's why she did the cover, because she was like, who's going to do the cover? And I'm like, well, you, because you finished. I've got four pages to bloody
cover. Yeah. But do you think that's given you guys confidence? Is that giving you guys confidence to go and do the longer form story now? Because you've kind of been successful and you've done that now. Yeah.
It really has, because we were both, I know Damien will agree with me on this one, that when we first did this, and like any work that we put out there, whether we put it on social media or, you know, whatever form, we are absolutely shitting ourselves when we put stuff out there, because we're always kind of being critical, and you're always self-critical about your work.
Yeah.
But you think, do you know, we've got to get it out there, because how else are people going to see it?
Yeah.
And when we first did this, we thought, shit, you know, what are we doing? Well, I certainly did anyway. And it's like when we've had exhibitions, and we had a big exhibition in Manchester a few years ago. And when we'd hung everything, I stood there and I really started panicking, thinking, what the hell am I doing? But I get like this, you know. And then when we sent all this thing, you know, one of those things where we went through it and we proofread it and proofread it and proofread it, thought, shit, you know, is everything right? And when we sent it off, I really started panicking. And then when the boxes came, I was frightened to death of opening them.
Yeah,
thinking,
you were saying that to me on the DMs. Yeah,
Shit, what, you know, what the hell have we done? And then we was like, right, it's here now. We've got to start bloody selling the shit out of this. Mm. But I think because we've had, and we know it's our first time, we know we've still got stuff to learn. And it is a big learning curve. The whole production of it was a learning curve, and it will continue to be so. But now we've got overcome that initial fear, a fear of doing it and fear of us, you know, physically doing it and fear of putting it out there. I think that's given us the confidence. And I wouldn't say huge self-confidence. I still lack confidence in myself.
I'd be worried about someone who didn't. To be fair.
Oh, Jesus,
And it's a double-edged sword, though, as well, isn't it? Because you have the fear, but then that is mixed with the excitement of it all.
It is. The fear drives you. It does drive you to try and do better each time, because, you know, otherwise how do you ever get better if you don't try and improve yourself all the time?
I genuinely think you've got to stop worrying what people think.
Oh, totally,
I'm probably by far the oldest person in the room, and that comes with age, mate. I've got to tell you, I don't really care what people think of my comics now. I'm just glad that I've done them. Sorry, mate.
All your dress sense.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, no need for that, was there?
You know, was
lying, he shot at me with a Nerf gun.
Well, I'm not surprised. I bet you was provoked.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he could spy you to shoot.
And that was Damien, everyone. See you next week.
Spinning off that point for Tony there, like, there's that sound, like, when you're young, you give a shit about what everyone thinks.
When
you get a bit older, you don't give a fuck. And then when you get older still, you realise no one was thinking about you in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
it's weird, though, because...
And I think as you get a distance from the material you put out as well, the thing about comics now that we sort of get them done, get them printed, get them out. We do it quite quickly now, don't we? We never mull it over and sit there back on our heels and look at it and think, a couple of months, I might put that out in a couple of months. So we never seem to do that now, do we?
In terms of
funny as well, because talking about not really giving a shit. I mean, generally in life, I'm at that point. I generally don't give a shit, you know what I mean? I mean, H nicknames me a social assassin sometimes, because, you know, you'll just say things because people need to be told. But with art, it's different. I think there is, sure all of us agree, because we're all creators. There's still something about the creative bit that I worry about. You know, everything I put out, I immediately dislike the minute I do it, because all I see are the bad things. And it's getting out of that habit, though, of going... You know, people go, oh, that's really nice. And then you've got the urge to go, but look at that finger. You know what I mean?
You can't see the wood for the trees.
Get a review in for something I've worked in, and then I'm like, oh, fuck. I don't usually click on it straight away. I leave it for an hour or two before opening up and reading it, just because of that.
Yeah.
Once if I click it and they don't like it, I've got to steel myself.
I'm also a great believer that if you do something that has any kind of sort of intelligence behind it, and your story certainly does, because it has an element of the twist and the realization, not everyone's going to get it.
Do
you know what I mean? And I think that's quite applicable to horror comics.
Yeah,
the twist sometimes and the mood and the vibe can be so much a part of it that some people, whether through lack of intelligence or just not connecting with the material, don't always get it.
Yeah. And I think that's across the board as well. I mean, I know there's been books, and it's not just horror, but there's been books that I don't necessarily get, or they're not necessarily for me, but they're huge because they connect with a different sort of audience, or, you know.
Of course. It's subjective, isn't it? You know.
And talk about the reviews. When you guys were reviewing pre-mortis a few weeks back, and I stopped the podcast at that point because I was listening to it on my headphones, and I put it on speaker and I said to Rachel, we're going to listen to this together. And then
I tell you what, my arse nearly fell out.
H was shaking like a shitting dog.
It was
quite funny, actually. But, you know, I really appreciate the kind words. And you picked up on a lot of the themes that I wasn't sure and H wasn't sure that people would get.
But it's like you'd had a window into our minds. It was like, holy shit, you really get what we're trying to get, do here. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the I'm not blowing our trumpet because there's a lot of great reviewers out there and better than us. But that's how a reviewer should be able to interpret the material.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think.
No, but that also comes down on you guys, the storytellers, being able to communicate those ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And people surface read too much stuff. They scan through stuff. You can tell the reviews where they've just scanned through it and they don't get it. It's interesting.
And when it comes to your book in particular, they're two very different flavours of story, both very dark in their own way. What influenced you both to do the, how did you come up with these individual stories? Because once you decided to go that separate path, because one of them is more, I would say, psychological, and the other one's a little bit more, I want to say Texas Chainsaw.
Well, you win a prize. It's funny because we talk about this in the car on the way home. Big shout out to Man City Council there. But we were talking about this and we were trying to think of the things that you might be interested in, and it is interesting because the stories are very different, but that's because although we like a lot of similar kind of horror films and things like that, I mean, we like lots of things, but when it comes to horror we have a lot of similarity, but we also like, you know, our favorite films are very different. Okay. And you can get that. So, you know, H is very much more, she likes like a kind of psychological horror and things that, you know, like there's a lot of tension building up.
Yeah.
And I'm just a bit of a, you know, a schlocky horror kind of, you know, I love the old B movies, you know, I love my favourite films. I mean, obviously Texas Chainsaw.
It's funny.
Favourite horror film.
But... Damien, because when we talk about horror comics, every year we talk about horror comics and we, as a podcast, try to talk about comics rather than the movies, because people, I think, possibly talk about certainly superhero movies a bit more than the comics, where they should do talk about the comics more. But
yeah.
I think there's much more of an interconnection between horror movies and horror comics these days.
Mm. I agree.
Tend to talk more about the comparison between the two than they do in any other sort of genre in our medium of comics. You know, people, if you're talking about a superhero comic, you're not really going to be referencing the movies because they're much more of a thing that's come since.
And I think it's also with horror, it's a lot of it is the feeling you get. The
similar language.
The emotional response you have to, you know, whether it be a comic, a book or a movie or whatever. We've all, you know, seen those films where, you know, they haven't necessarily scared us, but we feel genuinely uncomfortable.
Unnerving. Yeah.
And certainly I know, I've read comics where I've got that from a comic that is more uncomfortable, and those things stick with you and stay with you. And I think that's one common theme that the horror genre has in comics, that it doesn't have, you know, it makes that same connection that a lot of other genres don't necessarily have. This is my personal opinion, and that's the discomfort of it. I think that sort of emotional response that you have, comics can do that like a book or like a movie, whereas, you know, the feeling that you had when you saw one of these big scenes in the Avengers, it's probably more difficult to get that in a comic. You can, obviously you can do it, but it's doesn't
completely
necessarily...
different. It's a completely different emotional response for me.
I was going to say, do you think, though, that's because, I mean, a lot of the stuff that influenced us when we're writing horror and creating a horror book is stuff that I've seen. I mean, a lot of my favourite films are from the 70s, so it's been in me. You know, it's not new. I mean, I don't think there's been a decent new horror film for a very long time, I think, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean,
I don't think there's been they've become homogenised. I think the transgressive nature of the cinema of the 70s and early 80s hasn't been touched again. People are scared to go there, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I find some of the best examples of comics, certainly recently, you know, things like Our Final Halloween, you know, it captures this essence like the 80s, you know, whenever we talk about these comics, like, God, that reminds me of Night of the Demons, or you know, it reminds me of Night of the Living Dead, or, you know, comics can really encapsulate that, time.
It needs to be that disturbing thing. And I think for me, the claustrophobic nature of both your stories, especially yours is H, I could see as kind of a BBC 1970s play for the day.
Like a Talking Heads thing. You know, and that was kind of what I was trying to... You hit the nail on the head when you were saying, Dan said about discomfort, something that makes you feel that discomfort.
Yeah, yours is a physical discomfort, I felt, whilst reading it, not a bad way. Do you know what I mean? It did definitely make me itch. Yeah. For those that don't, perhaps haven't heard the review yet, did you both want to give a little rundown of what, without any spoilers, what your stories are about? Because this helps people visualise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Well, I'll start with mine, obviously, because mine sits at the front. But it's essentially, like I say, without giving too much away, it's kind of set in the here and now, in the modern world, where the scenario is like a day-to-day scenario where there's two talking heads, that there's a very claustrophobic feel to the panels, and you can see them descending into, without giving too much away, descending into something that's really uncomfortable. You have that feeling of discomfort. I like to think it gives across that feeling of discomfort, into a final point where you go, oh shit, what's happened here? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else to say without giving too much away.
And I don't know how I feel about it if I read it for the first time now, having met you both, but it's basically you too, isn't it?
It is, essentially, yeah. And what I like the idea of doing in the future is when I do a second standalone story is using like an ensemble cast, you know, because we are always there. You know, when I used to teach art, I used to say to people, use yourself as somebody to draw because you're always there. You know, and it's really good practice.
Yeah.
And not really that, we don't mind pulling faces, as you can see from the story. You know, you pull faces for each other, pull your own face, and it's great. But ask other people to do that. Oftentimes people go, I'm happy to pose, no problem. But you're then bringing other characters in, and there is a sort of, you've got to be, I don't know, be careful about likenesses, and depends what you're going to get that character to do. And they might go, you cheeky bastard, I'm not like that, you know.
Yeah, cheeky bastard.
Okay, what about yours, dude? What's yours?
Well, I mean, mine just kind of it's a bit of a throwback to the old sort of schlock horror, you know, kind of hit the ground running, set in a world that's obviously gone tits up somehow, and I don't want to kind of spoil, but it's quite timely, I think, the backstory to it as it progresses. And it does try and build on that little bit of, you know, the kind of Hills Have Eyes, Texas, so that, you know, there's a dysfunctional family at the heart of the story, and, you know, the story of a black sheep in there and stuff. And it's that kind of feeling that, you know, you're not always predestined by your family, but actually, you know, some of the worst people you can meet can be your family. Do you know what I mean? And it's that kind of...
That's your story was more how I imagine the north of England to be.
There it is.
Finally.
Well, that's it now.
The Tony Esmond alienation moment.
What's that number for the hate crimes?
I'm rescinding your invitation up north now. Forget it.
don't make him come instead. That's the trick.
Yeah.
but it's the interesting thing about the ensemble cast, because we deliberately did that, because the one thing I've liked about American Horror Story, for example, some of the series are trash, and I've only ever seen like halfway through most series. Mm. But I do like this idea of having an ensemble cast that come back as different characters.
Mm. It's just a different story every time, isn't it? So if you like one season, then you can watch all of that. If you don't, then you don't have to watch it.
Right, that's it. And we kind of like that idea, and we decided early on that we'd use ourselves, and that moving forward for the other stories, we will, you know, based some of the characters on ourselves as an ensemble cast, just because it's just kind of interesting, because the idea is these are the things that can happen in the modern world. So therefore, in theory, you know, they could happen. These things could happen to us at any point. And they're not linear stories in so much as if something happens in the first issue, that means you're out of the picture for the second issue. It just means you come back round again, and then something else horrible happens, and so that's kind of the idea.
Like, it is like a stage play. It is like I like that. I like that. And I remember watching stuff like the original version of Brimstone and Treacle and stuff like that, which was the BBC. And they were just so strange and disturbing. And
that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last moment of that just stayed with me. My God.
I've never heard of that.
Oh,
it's,
man.
Sting's in the movie version of it. There's a movie version of it called Sting. Yeah. It was Sting called Brimstone and Treacle. And it's actually quite good as well.
It is, yeah.
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 Very strange, man. They'd never do that now. This is one.
They wouldn't even be allowed to show it now, I don't think.
I think you're right.
I don't think you'll ever see that on TV. You know, it's quite strange because growing up, you know, a lot of things I loved, you know, you couldn't get on video. They got banned. You couldn't this.
Yeah,
couldn't
me
see.
Too. Yeah, I mean, I was a kid during the video nasty stuff and
yeah.
at boarding school, and we'd go into town and we'd rent Texas Chainsaw Massacre and we'd rent Zombie Apocalypse and, you know, all this sort of yeah. stuff. And you'd think, fucking hell.
Yeah. I tell you, there was a thing on a TV show about like kids like now fucking around on the tracks and like how the numbers are growing. Right. And it's like they should bring back those films they used to put on like at school, some kid flying a kite by the power lines.
Yeah. And they had like the bloody Grim Reaper in some of them, didn't they? Like a huge dude in a big cloak. It was terrifying.
And that was just about not going in the pond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it gets the message across, though.
Yeah,
doesn't
God, yeah.
It?
Yeah. Yeah.
So get now, the shit out of your kids.
I think the most frightening one for today would be, you know, don't let your phone go beneath 20% or something. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's probably the only thing you could do in it.
Yeah.
It's a warning to you, you know, that kind of crap.
Low battery kills.
Yeah. Kind of horror, like kind of the things we had hanging over when we was kind of a bit younger, when you had like fucking TV shows like Threads and After and the kind of the whole Cold War in the 1980s. I guess there's different sort of worries and concerns that people have nowadays to where.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had more serial killers as well. I mean, not wishing to kind of sound a bit weird here, but
we had better serial killers back then.
In my day, they used to make sulfurs out of people.
but you know, it's terrible. Oh, mate. Well, it's true though. I mean, you know, these days it's like there's a lot of horror in the world. I mean, people say what's the most frightening thing, and it's like, well, actually, it's just reality, isn't it? I mean, you can't top that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you know, there did seem to be more kind of cases of, you know, I wouldn't say popular, but well-known cases of serial killings and things. And I'm not advocating it's a great thing. I'm just saying that all of this builds in your psyche as a kid. And as you grow up, you know, you start to claw some of these things back again, you know.
Yeah. So I think in modern times, for instance, a serial killer is now an 8-episode podcast or a Netflix documentary.
Netflix documentary.
Yeah,
here we go.
That's
again.
What it all is now.
Was it Herzog says the greatest drama is a documentary? Yeah, because they're so skewed as well these days, aren't they?
I think one of the things horror suffers with as well that now with the internet and stuff, you can go online and see someone's head being chopped off.
Yeah,
For
you
real.
Keep promoting that, Dan. You keep talking.
It's
like,
fucking great.
Do you want to put a link in the show notes or something?
Do you know what I mean? Like. If you was doing a horror film back in the day and say we go back to Exorcist 3 with a head with scissors, it's not actually shown on screen, and like it feels like horror constantly has to be pushed forward, like it has to be more and more extreme all the time to have an impact, and I think that is where comics can struggle, is having that kind of impact. It works more for me when it's creepy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can always get to that emotion. If you're trying to shock with horror, body shock.
Creature feature stuff in comics as well. The designs you get, like Wrightson and Steve Bissett and all these people who've done some like incredible designs that, you know, you'd have to, there might be three costume, you know, three monster designers in movies who get anywhere near that.
Yeah.
You know, but every issue was a different disturbing worm that burrows into your brain you know, this sort of thing. It was just incredible stuff.
Dan's point brings up the first question we're going to mention. That's from Daryl Thorpe, the man who is the most excited about Dan Butcher walking around the convention.
And played with his nipple.
Is that with his shortcut route, or was that the unedited version that nobody saw? Yeah. I know why he took the shortcut, because he was worried somebody was going to have his mini rolls, and he had to get back to protect his hoard.
Is that a euphemism? I've got my mini rolls.
Get your hands off my mini rolls, right?
Have we become last of summer wine?
We have. I mean, you're clearly compo, Tony.
He's claiming compo.
Anyway, back to the question. Yeah, Daryl Thorpe, he says, why is it so hard to write scary stuff? I don't think I've read an actual scary comic. Scary books, yes. Do you think it is the art that holds it up?
See, I've got a theory on this, and it's just a theory.
Here we go. Strap in, lads.
I think, now then, I've got to try and articulate my words properly here, but I think with a comic, because it's short, isn't it? You know, it's whatever many pages, 32 pages, less than that, whatever it is. Yeah. It's really hard to try and be creepy and have something frightening in it and so on. So that's one thing. Then you've got a book which can be, you know, a really big, thick coffee table book, and you've got lots of room, lots of word space there to get a horror story across and creepy and all the rest of it. So, and then if I now connect that to films, with a horror film, what you're lacking in both a book and a comic is the music, because I think music is the thing that makes a horror film horrific. Yeah. It kind of evokes this impending sense of doom, because some of my favourite horror films have some of the best music, because it really gets your pulse racing. So you've got that's missing from both of those things, comics and books. With books, you've got that element of, you've got a lot of time and a lot of space to evoke that kind of horror and creepiness and doom and all the rest of it. But with a comic, you've got a very short period of time to try and get that across. So it is really difficult, because you've got that element of, you're turning over the page and you're trying to do a page turn where you turn onto a page to make sure you go, oh shit, you know, I wasn't expecting that. But then you could try and do that on every page, but then you've got to try and winkle that story into those pages to make it land in such a way that you turn the page and go, oh shit.
Tension's a very difficult thing to
build up in a comic.
I think with a comic as well, you've got to be prepared to give in to the strangeness of it sometimes. Some of the comics that most disturbed me are perhaps when I was younger, you know, which had stuff that I was like totally invested into the page. And I think you really have to be with a horror comic to feel the mood.
You really do. I think if you go into it with kind of, oh, what's this about? Oh, I don't understand that. I think you've really got to absorb yourself in it and really get into the particularly if there's a rhythm in it. You know, when you're reading something, something's got a bit of a rhythm to it, and you think, you know, like a rhythm of a train, and it's taking you through it and taking you through it. And it's a bit like with the poem that we've got in our comic, in our horror comic. That poem's got a rhythm to it, and it makes your heart race and it gets your pulse. I think that's how some of the panels need to be. You know.
I think. Although some people may think, because they don't have a soundtrack, it might limit them in comics, I think sound effects and the lettering can really bring it forward.
Totally.
I always remember Witches, Scott Snyder and Jock. I remember the first issue of that. You know, there's not a lot of reveals. There's not big, you know, splash pages. You're not seeing lots of monsters and stuff. But there's like these scratching noises and stuff just throughout the book, and it just, you know, it just makes you uncomfortable, and that's what that, I mean, back to lettering as well, you know, that shows how important lettering can be, that you know, without seeing anything gory or creepy, you can really freak someone out with just a sound effect on the comic page, you know.
And apart from noir thrillers, I would say that the horror genre is the one that suits black and white the most, actually.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Some of my favourite stuff, certainly speaking of Wrightson just there, some of my favourite black and white artwork is by Wrightson.
Wrightson's one of my favourite artists of all time.
You love his stuff, man, don't you? But also the Walking Dead worked for being black and white as well.
He really did.
And I think the reason that I actually found that quite disturbing to read at times.
Yeah.
And there's obviously those big moments, which we won't spoil. There's a couple of like big ones on there that are just like, oh my God. But I think because what Kirkman does so wisely in that is he builds up your liking, loving, familiarity with the characters, and then he does away with them.
And I think colour would have spoiled it. Do you know what I mean?
I think
there's the importance of colour, and certainly if you've got a really gory comic, you know, you may love your blood, but there's only so much red you can put on a page before it becomes... Yeah. It's like an explosion. Do you know what I mean? There's only so many of them you can see before you numb to it. It's the same with like blood and gore
effects. It's like the scanner's moment. If you've got a film full of that scanner's moment, it's not going to work, but it works at that moment, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
I think I think as well that sometimes less is more, which is difficult in a comic medium. So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, I know we've talked about Texas Chainsaw, but there's a big misunderstanding that that is a really gory horror film. And actually, it isn't when you watch it.
Yeah.
You know, there is very little gore in it because it's all cutaway shots. And the worst kind of thing I think you can do to someone is make them use their imagination. And, you know, because the things you can imagine are happening are far worse than probably what we could put on a page, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because and I think everybody's got their own triggers, you know.
Yeah.
It's the pacing as well, guys, on horror. I think that's kind of almost as important as the artwork sometimes, isn't it? Yeah. The pacing of stuff and the page turns.
I mean,
and the build up. You know, it's got to be that.
Going back to what you did, you said there about Kirkman, it's horror for me, very much you got to kind of get that character right that's very human and got you can kind of. Project yourself on that character and you can understand their fears and concerns and worries when they're very real. When stuff happens to them, it feels real. I mean, if they're kind of like, it's like the trashy ones where you kind of get like the cardboard cutout characters and horrible stuff happens to them, it's more of a laugh to see that happen to them. But
and when if it's that's like what a real person for, with
real fears,
that's fine. For instance, like Mike Garley's Samurai Slasher knows what it's going for. It's giving you that flavour that you want because you know, those people that want a Friday the 13th just to watch some idiots get chopped up. That's exactly what you want.
But, same with Slaughterhouse Farm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. that extreme sort of horror.
Yeah, it goes extreme.
But then there's other stories like, you know, I think one of the things that Steve Niles, one of the reasons that 30 Days a Night was such a huge story at the time. And when I read it, I love the first arc. I didn't read so much of the later ones, but there were characters, like you say, Dan, it was people at the core of the story and the horror had sort of happened around them. You know,
with comics as well, we get fewer straight horror comics compared to other mediums because if you look back at some of the sort of historic comics that have described themselves as horror, like for example, Tomb of Dracula is kind of it's almost like a detective stroke soap opera stroke horror. And Planet of the Apes, for example, I would describe as a horror film. I remember it, especially the second movie, freaking me the fuck out.
Yeah.
And the comics freaking me out as kids. But that's a horror movie joined with an adventure film, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Morbius, Living Vampire started in Spider-Man, you know, this sort of thing. There's a lot of stuff that crosses over into a couple of genres. I don't mind that at all.
With those comics, some of those characters are born from what's like huge... in like popular culture at the time, you know,
the Frankenstein comic,
Frankenstein or the boom of the Hammer horror, and like you know things like that, and all of a sudden Marvel have got a vampire, you know they got the
Werewolf by Night is kind of a horror story, but it's like a fun, you know, it's like a journey movie really, and a lot of the monster movies, like monster comics that they've done, you know, Devil Dinosaur and stuff like that, they're kind of just monster, you know. It's almost a delineation between that and a horror movie sometimes, you know.
But the relatable character thing, I think that's important across all comics, isn't it? Because you do this in Vanguard, Dan, won't you? Where you know you're building people up, and then things are happening to them, and you're like, shit, you know, quite like them. You know what I mean? So it's the same principle.
Yeah,
you're right. If you don't actually care about, you know, the main protagonist or whatever. You don't care about what happens in the film, the book, the comic, or anything, do you? And that's the difficult bit.
Yeah.
It's trying to create someone that's rounded enough that people genuinely give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, if they get hacked to pieces or
exactly.
Not,
you know? I mean, some people take it too far, especially with the social media and stuff, but some people take it too far. But if you have an emotional reaction to one of your favourite characters dying, then the creator's done something right.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Because you've been invested in that character.
Within the confines of that reading experience, and don't take it beyond that. Don't send people death.
Yeah. I mean,
within the confines of that. And we're all realists, aren't we? And that's exactly, we should walk away with a bit of a,
it's made up, guys.
Yeah, just let us tell the story.
It's made up.
Which leads me into a question to you two, our guests. How would you feel if one of you suggested to the other that you kill the character based on you in the next issue, quite painfully? Is that... Do you know what I mean?
I'd be up for that.
Yeah, you'd be up for killing.
I mean, let's just say I sleep with one eye open anyway.
I mean, do you ever wake up in the night and go, what if I gorged your eyes out?
In the comic? Yeah, in the comic.
Like, yeah,
every day.
The great thing is, though, that it wouldn't matter. It genuinely wouldn't matter as long as we both sort of discussed it, and we thought, do you know what, that'd be a really good idea. I guarantee what would happen if I came up and said to Rach, I've got a really good way of killing you in the book. She'd probably say, what is it? And I'd tell her, and then she'd come up with a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
as long as it wouldn't involve, point, right, I take your cash point, get your money out, pretend you're at the cash point. You know, it's like really detailed. And you can think, hang on a minute.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's interesting because obviously the way my particular story is going to pan out, I've already written the second part of our, I've forgotten what it's called now. That's great for your own story, isn't it?
So I think mine.
I've penned the second part, I've done the thumbnails, and that does get dark. I mean, it makes the first episode look like happy days, you know what I mean? Right. So so there are bad things on the horizon for our alter egos, but, you know, as long as it works in the story,
exactly. Yeah.
That's all you can do in it, okay. You know?
Yeah.
And obviously, H, with, you know, Damon's got a continuation of his story, and obviously you're going to be doing another sort of original tale. Is there any pressure you feel on doing the second one, and like to doing, because it's not going to be the same sort of, you know, horror or, you know, scares or whatever it is, you know, do you find that you're quite happy with how the first one came out, and, you know, what are you going to do for the second one, or do you have like lots of ideas of how to creep us all out?
I must confess there is a little bit of pressure on now, because I've been tinkering with a few ideas I haven't penned anything yet, tinkering with a few ideas for the second story.
Yeah.
But I've also been, because I do a lot of writing, I've always been a writer, I've always written for donkey's years. And I've been writing some ideas down for an independent comic as well, which would be a sort of combination of short stories, which would be for all ages, not like a horror thing, but, you know, so I've been tinkering with that. But as far as the second story is concerned, some of the ideas that I came up with, when I reread them, I thought, these seem a bit kind of a bit whiny, you know, a bit kind of
okay.
a bit of a sad indictment on society. And I thought that on its own was a bit of a sad indictment on the corporate society, you know, because I work in a very corporate environment.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, people don't come out with those phrases where I work. It was more of a ridiculous kind of over-exaggeration, because I'd read this article about some of the phraseology that comes out in the corporate world, and some of the phrases were just utter bullshit. And I thought, do people really say this? So I went, like, you know, too far on that end of you know, turning into one of the corporate arseholes, because that's my biggest fear, is turning into a corporate arsehole, because it's not me at all.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so, we need to have a word after, love.
Yeah, sorry. Smother me, will you? But yeah, so the second Hang story, I don't want it going...
See, yeah, baggins later, I'll tell
you. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, I've got Jesus a story there, but it's not for the podcast.
The have you thought about the autobiographical comic You versus Manchester City Council, which is something I love.
I tell you what, if
don't bite, H.
Well, no, I'm not. No, if I could kind of make up a fictional, you know, council and a fictional place and a fictional, I could go down that path. But, there was some. I did reach some points where I could have just jumped out the car and stood there like some crazy-ass woman on Mancuni Way going, this is fucking ridiculous! But I didn't. So
I did begin to wonder whether it was some kind of elaborate performance or not. I'd wake up and see a tweet from you guys saying, Manchester City Council, can you sort the traffic lights out? You know, it's like that.
Yeah,
well, but like a Northern Gilbert and George.
We are, very much so. Except, yeah, we speak. Oh, I think we're more like Hinge and Bracket, to be honest.
To be fair, yeah.
Hey, so we got some... another question.
Yes, yeah. We got a couple of questions. So the first one is going to be thrown in your direction, Dan.
Ooh. Okay.
From Matthew Bunce on the Facebook, he says, I'd like to know about Dan's experience making a horror comic for all ages. How far did they think they could push it in terms of gore and psychological horror, especially given that suggestion is sometimes worse than seeing?
Christ. a horror comic from all ages. That's tough. I mean,
because that's what Project Hoax is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more kind of like I guess like slight chills, and there's that kind of like a monster in it, which I've tried to put heavily in silhouette, so the kids would see project onto it what they would see, rather than like a graphic depiction of a monster, because it's going to be as scary as their imaginations allow or don't, really.
Yeah,
it's more trying to that what we've been discussing, trying to build an atmosphere within the comic and a pacing, rather than doing disgusting imagery.
And I think in some ways, when you do this, you kind of have to think about two audiences, especially with modern comic reading and stuff. Mm. There's the kid reading it, and let's face it, we've all been kids reading comics, and we probably don't give a rat's ass what it is. You know, the bigger, you know, a monster ripping someone's arm off, yes, all great, you know, all guns blazing or whatever. But the second audience is you've got to think about the parent.
Yeah.
Because the kid could love it and absolutely lap it up, but if the parent clocks that artwork and is unhappy about it,
yeah, can't be having this.
Yeah, then the shit. I mean, as a parent, you probably understand where they're coming from, Dan, would you?
Yeah, but at the same kind of thing of that, like I can remember looking at an adult book that kind of had horror stuff in it. Oh. Like, say I was younger, picking up Fangoria and like seeing something, bloody hell.
Yeah,
and I knew it. I was too young for it, but you got that kind of like thrill of seeing something scary that you wasn't supposed to, and it kind of sticking with you. I mean, that scene in RoboCop where Murphy gets blown apart—that's like psychological scarring because I saw that very young, and I have trouble watching that.
See, for me,
I get caught by that. Is it the Curse of the Werewolf, the Hammer movie?
Yeah,
that's really rough. I tried watching that recently. I'm like, no wonder that stuck with me. That image of him in the in the cell downstairs, and incredible.
So
with RoboCop especially as well, the one that and it was always what the kids that saw it before me would always talk about the scene. It's always those descriptions of what you think you're about to see, isn't it, which always sound worse than when you actually finally see it. But I remember for the longest time I was really freaked out about watching the scene where the guy is covered in toxic waste,
really,
and melting. When people describe that, like when you're a kid, it just sounds like the most horrific thing in the world. These days, I just laugh at it because it's hilarious when it's
I
remember we were watching the old, as I said earlier, we were watching the video Nasties in the boarding house, and we'd go back into school and say, I don't know, I watched Cannibal Apocalypse. I found Cannibal Ferox this week. Someone chopped someone's knob off and ate it. And it got back to the parents of the day boys because they were saying, oh, Mum, can we watch Cannibal Ferox this weekend? they will watch it in the boarding house. You know, and we were watching some really rough kung fu movies where they just snap people's arms off and stuff. And they came to the housemaster and complained to day boys' parents. So we had to stop renting videos for a while. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
We had
There's a great English movie called Schizo, which was one of the few video Nazis, and in that there's an eye popping scene in that, and you still can't get it. They showed it on the Horror Channel recently, and it doesn't include that scene still.
We had talking
about that nonstop.
The thing in Ayla was watching a film like on a Friday afternoon, like at lunchtime, and was watching all these gore and horror films, and the teacher said, "Look, you can't watch these. There's younger kids around. So if you watch these again, I'm gonna have to take them off for you." And we was like, "Fine, okay." So someone brought in The Bodyguard and put that on. It's like, you can't get pulled over for this. So the teacher stuck his head around the door. And there's a sequence where some bloke's broken into Whitney Houston's house. And he goes, he broke in, and like all he ended up doing was masturbating on the bed.
And we've all done that, though. I was like, she used to get that a lot, I think.
That 5 seconds audio is not reflected with the rest of the film.
I mean, maybe that's where we got away with reading scary comics. Because I remember reading some really fucking scary shit when I was a kid. And because it was comics, no one was bothered, you know. And I remember having a couple of like copies of stuff like Eerie and Creepy and some of that Warren magazines and stuff, and thinking, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, certainly a lot of the stuff that you had in 2000 AD was pretty flipping horrific week on week.
I remember being scared of that when I was a kid. Yeah.
13th Floor was pretty disturbing. Yeah. You know, when you kind of reread 13th Floor, it's quite barbaric, some of it. You know, it's just like a mental computer, but it's brilliant. You know, it really is. Still holds up. And Fiends of the Eastern Front, as well. That's another one that I find really creepy. You know, genuinely creepy, that.
Yeah.
I was flicking through the trade the other day on that, and it's, I mean, the artwork's fantastic anyway, but, you know, that, and it's in black and white, which helps build a kind of
atmosphere. That's a great series, not talked about enough. So is it a tank squadron during the Second World War, or actually vampires or something? Is it something like that? Is it? I can't remember now. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I need to get this.
Yeah. I get mixed up between the different arcs, because I know Ian Edgerton's recently kind of resurrected it, the pun, and he's taking it to a different kind of era, you know. And I'm just trying to think, the original scenario it's basically about Nazi vampires, isn't it? You know, arc, I'm sure. And it is brilliant. I mean, I'd say if anybody's not read it, it is absolutely worth reading. It's brilliant. And it's kind of like a mix between a really good horror kind of black and white old horror film and a Hammer. You know, it's a bit Hammy
in
parts.
Yeah.
And a bit of a war film. You know, that, you've got everything in there. It's right.
Yeah. It's just come out in trade, mate, as well, actually.
Oh,
you can get
nice. That's right. Brilliant. Yeah. Speaking of something that was talking about being creeped out, another question we had from Drew Hurd. He said, do you think it's easier to make people feel unsettled in comics rather than actually scare them?
Yeah, I think we kind of covered this, didn't
we? I think... I mean, I mean, how many times in a review have I said, oh, I've never really been scared by comics, but this comic genuinely creeped me out.
Of Uzumaki's Spiral creeped me out. That was really creepy, that whole book.
Okay. I was thinking of the anatomy lesson and stuff like that from the early, you know, the Alan Moore Swamp Things, Steve Bissett, John Tottlebins, all that sort of little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found that very disturbing.
Okay. Here, from everyone here that's tried to write or create something scary, Gareth A. Hopkins, who has one of the best Facebook avatars,
I've seen that,
which is just his face looking miserable with the word joy written across it. Extra points for that. But he says, when making comics to be scary, is it better to write based on what scares you, the creator, or what you perceive the reader's fears to be? I think that's quite interesting.
I think you've got to go for the first one.
Yeah.
Because you never know the second one.
Exactly.
I think the trick is not to hold back. Mm. I think the trick is, well, two tricks. Never pander and never hold back.
Yeah.
And I think we never play safe horror. That's what really winds me up, safe horror.
Yeah,
you know, you get some Hollywood A-lister in a movie about ghosts and you think, is that it really?
Come on,
fucking hell. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think you've got to kind of explore your fears, and then if you've done your job, the people kind of will have an empathy with what you've written and connect with it. I mean, because we all share relatively the same amount of kind of concerns and worries.
And we'll talk about one later, won't we? We'll talk about, in regards to the competition, something later that can be a fear of us all, I think.
I mean, some of the big horrors have been about tapping into those fears that a lot of people have. And obviously, you've got like the zombie stuff is like you against another society that's kind of out to get you, or like Stephen King's It, clowns, concern about older men. In face paint, the ones hanging around with kids.
I wonder what that's mean.
And clowns.
Yeah, and clowns.
Clown porn. That's quite horrific.
I don't like clowns. I really don't like
clowns. No, he really doesn't like clowns.
I thought you were going to say you don't like clown porn, which is a really weird thing.
Oh, Jesus.
Custard pies.
Have you ever seen clown porn? Has anyone ever seen clown porn?
Right, our next question.
They go the whole way. They do the noses.
Right.
No,
right, okay.
I think I did see one once. Yeah, I think a door's fell off.
End up with a different type of cream pie.
The back doors.
Children.
Sorry.
Jesus.
Almost went off topic.
has anyone ever read Triple X Zombies, by the way?
No.
No.
Rick Remender. I'm thinking it's Rick Remender. Can't remember off the top of my head. That really goes there as well. It's like a porn film being shot and everyone gets zombified and it's like,
oh god. Do things fall off?
Yeah, they have a habit of it, yeah.
Oh god.
Wow. God. Rick Remender, did you say? He can properly... He's got a hell of a brain on
him. I think it is him. I'll have to look it up. It's either him or Van Lente. I can't remember off the top of my head.
There's a horrible thing someone was mentioning today with Chris Morris. It wasn't, not sure. Yeah, it's Brass Eye when they... Oh. Seen that with the gush.
The gush.
They just become skeletal with this kind of continually ejaculating. They can't stop. Everyone's screaming.
That's
a horrible idea.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Oh, I think I've got my next standalone story.
Yeah. To be fair, we've all been there, though, haven't we?
Jesus.
A woman at my work suffers from that.
Right, okay, the next question. We've got a couple more before we move on. Right, okay. From Simon Darricott, what elements do you believe are required for a comic to be classed as horror?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because so many are crossover these days.
Mm. And when does a thriller become a horror?
Yeah, that's true. When does the murder become a horror than just a murder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's weird, you know, there are comics... comics about serial killers and stuff, but, you know, at what point does a serial killer become a horror story? Or is it a horror story from the very beginning, you know?
I mean, a lot of things are two things, aren't they? A lot of things are more than two things, you know? A lot of, like, the X-Men is a soap opera and a superhero, you know? The Avengers is, you know? And I think... I don't know. I don't think... I'm not into classification that much with the horror genre, I think. I would hate there to be a horror genre shelf for comics, for example, because it would be a real mixture of different stuff. And I don't, you know,
and like I think you said, because it's a genre that spans Warriors, all ages as well. Because you can get horror for kids. So, you know, I think
it's all very subjective, isn't it? What you consider to be horror.
Cause
I might find one thing horrific and somebody else might go, well, I don't find that, but I find this horrific. Yeah. And Tony's right about not classifying things as such, because there is a crossover. It could be, you know, because, like, I think going back to a point you mentioned earlier about things are often an allegory for something else. Like zombies being the outcasts in society, and it's normally making reference to something else in society that's going on. But they put it across as zombies, or they put it across as vampires or aliens or whatever it may be. There's normally an underlying story behind it. And you could see that as either a horror or more of it's like kind of documentary in a way. So yeah, you're right. It is very subjective as to what
I was just looking at my shelf here. I was looking at my shelf here, and like a lot of Conan can be classed as horror.
Yeah, definitely.
And a lot of Batman can be classed as horror. You know,
Conan often goes into kind of like Lovecraftian territory.
Yeah. And when you look at someone like the ventriloquist in Batman, you think, well, that's kind of horror, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even the Joker is, well, as we now know. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
It's a really scary book for lots of reasons. And for me, one of the reasons is turning the Mad Hatter into this inferred paedophile character, which he does, you know. Yeah. And that's horrific, you know, when you read that. Because the Mad Hatter's probably not everybody's number one villain from Batman. Mm. But when you read that book, and then particularly at the end when there's a line at the back of the book where each of the characters obviously does a pen portrait themselves. And the Mad Hatter's about, you know, being in a doll's house. And he likes dolls, especially the living ones. And you're like, Jesus Christ, you know.
Where did that go?
And the fact that he looks like Sid James in the book as well, and the blackest house kind of.
Yeah.
This kind of sense of, is that what he was getting? But it was that really spooked me out, that book. I mean, I think it's an absolute work of art as well.
Yeah.
But it works on lots of levels, you know, psychologically and working up through the different layers of the house, you know, as Batman works his way through the different foes and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really good example of taking like a mainstream character, and as you say, Tony, put it into a horror book, you know, a genuinely horrific book.
Yeah.
I love that book.
And the other one I was thinking about is Hellboy. Hellboy is horror mixed with Indiana Jones on occasion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Swamp Thing's another one. Used to freak the shit out of me, Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Yeah. And things like Spawn. Man. Spawn as well. Yeah. I mean, for the you know, more modern audience, maybe. But, you know, there's a lot of horror inspired characters, aren't there, really?
Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, so see, we get highbrow as well as the absolute filth that we've heard in this
episode.
Sorry
about that. But
I think to sign us off on this conversation, which has been one of the best conversations about horror
I think we've had
on this. Yeah. So we'll sign off with this one from Michael Robertson. Thank you to all the people who sent in questions, by the way. We've got a lot of new people asking, which is brilliant. What do you think comics do better than any other medium when it comes to horror?
I was thinking about this one. This is the only question I saw earlier before we came on. I think what comics do best is we do the continuing character. So we do the John Constantine. Look, how many comics has he been in? Just his own series was over 300, isn't it? We do Swamp Thing. We do Man Thing. We do Tomb of Dracula. We do Werewolf Night. I know there are returning characters in horror, so Jason and all these sort of people, you know. But I think we do the central character surrounded by the horror as an ongoing. I think we do really well. You can stick with a horror character and run through the decades with some of them, and I think that's better than some, you know, TV is catching up with that sort of thing, but I think we do well in that area, you know.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think the one thing that comics I love about comics is the fact you can build a whole canon around things, you know. You can spin things off from a great story. And I mean, I love canon anyway. I love canon in things, you know. I mean, I'm one of those like weird geeks that when you see a little nod to another story or something. I get really disproportionately excited, as H will tell you, you know. Yeah. And then I sit for 10 minutes explaining what it is, and she's like, yeah, I really don't care. I'm like, oh, okay. But I do think
I would never say that.
In horror, yeah. I think, again, it's the same thing. You know, you can bring elements back in that people may get from other stories and bring an extra weight to it, you know. And I'm trying to think of some examples, but of course it's gone out of my head at the moment. But, you know, I do think canon in comics works really well, and I think canon in horror comics can work really well, you know, when okay. it's been... done well.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, so something like Merrick the Elephant Man or something.
There you go. About that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I think we really do the anthology, and I know you do get a lot of horror films that have got maybe three or four like creep shows and stuff like that. Mm. But I think we've really run with that. You know, ever since sort of House of Mystery and House of Secrets and stuff like that, all the way through the horror anthologies that we're getting these days, especially in the small press. I think we really run with that, and I think a good horror anthology will have four or five really good ideas in it. And if that was the film or the TV world, that would be a whole TV series or a whole movie or something, you know, just one of those.
I mean, something like Creepshow, which was two films based on, it was EC Comics, was it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And now there's a new TV series on Shudder of Creepshow.
Is there? I didn't realise that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Apparently quite good as well. Oh, wow, like an anthology. Some are good, some aren't.
So yeah, you can pick and choose, can't you? Yeah. But stuff like Scream even. You know, we really do well with that. And I think we've got so many writers and so many artists who are a little bit unheralded, the likes of Doug mentioned, all these sort of guys who come up with just idea after idea after idea, you know, which I think if they put them in a TV, you know, writer's room, whatever the fuck we have these days, you know, they'd be like runaway successes, you know, because it's original, you know.
Yeah. One of my sort of final thoughts, not necessarily based on this question, but I think no matter who you are out there, no matter what kind of a creator you are, I think everyone should try their hand at writing a horror story at some point. Now, it doesn't have to be something that's going to freak someone out. It could be something for kids. It could be something. But I think it's a really... I think it's an important genre to try and sort of play in and to practice. It really does... It's a genre that gives you the opportunity to test everything that you want to tell in a story.
You know? I think it stretches you, doesn't it? Yeah. I think it just stretches you, you know.
Especially like when it comes to an anthology story where you've only got four pages, and if you think about what horror has to achieve in those four pages, that's quite a task. So if you want a challenge, try telling a horror story in four pages, especially one that's, I mean, like we talked about...
Or three pages.
Which we'll get at the end. Nice segue, we'll get onto that. But for instance... You know, there's always like those like the classic EC comics or you know the Creepshows or whatever. They've got to have the sting in the tail. There's the punchline.
The O'Mary. O'Mary.
So everyone should give horror a go. Even if people, when people say, "Oh, I don't really like horror comics," it's like all comics in general. You're gonna like. I promise you. There's a title out there that you're going to like.
But they don't like horror comics because they don't like that shock element. Yeah, they'll read Spider-Man where at the end of it he's pinned up against the wall and the rhino's running towards him and you think what's going to happen in the next episode. But there's a parallel between the two of those things.
And especially
there,
if you take that mini universe, you know, that with the Venom and the symbiotes and all that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just horror all over the shop.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah, give it a go.
Moving over to the script thing, the competition we laid down. Doing the I think that's a good exercise for writers and creators to try like write a horror story in a confined 3-4 pages because you have to have absolute mastery of what you're doing to do that. And like we've got a number of scripts in from readers.
We had a lot of people because we had a competition. That we threw out on the was it the last show or the, no it was 2 weeks ago wasn't it
two weeks ago.
Yeah, we extended it last week didn't we
we thought we'd announce the winner on this week's show but yes the competition was to sort of write a 3-page horror script wasn't it Dan do you want to
give
details of the competition before we go any
we
further?
Basically said 3-page horror script we didn't want to see me Tony or Vince in it and pretty much do anything you want completely open whatever content and just go for it and we said email it in we're going to read over them and pick one out and the one we pick out I was going to draw as a comic
yeah
nice
and we've had all the entries in we've been talking back and forth about them
yeah Great and, stuff. Thank you to everyone that sent something in. Yeah. Especially in such a short time frame, because like sometimes it takes me flipping weeks to write two pages, let alone...
I think I'd like to try this again, maybe with a different genre.
Well, I mean,
romance,
I was thinking, next year, year around Valentine's Day, we do a romance show because we haven't focused on that yet, and we need to do it. Love is in the air. Anyway, Dan, do you want to hold the reins on this one?
Should we cue the dramatic readings from me of a couple of them?
Oh, yeah. Right. Are you going to read the whole thing out? You are, aren't you? That's what you're going to do in this audio.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be so.
I don't even know what this is going to be like because I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
But so... let's hand it over to you, Dan.
It Sucked by Nick Bryan. Page one, panel one. Low-res old security camera footage of a 90s vampire and a football shirt biting a skinny indie kid in an Oasis t-shirt in a small town pub car park. Newsreader, Radio Nortel. 25 years has passed since the 1995 vampire attack on Little Washington. Indie kid on the radio. Live forever! Panel 2. More fuzzy old footage from the 90s TV news. A local man and a woman in their 30s, in decent shape, dressed like 90s anti-vampire action heroes, fighting the vampires in the streets. Wearing ammo belts full of stakes, garlic around their neck, cross-shaped holy water grenades, all the gear. Some vampires are in emo hoodies, some are in Ninja Turtles or Spice Girls merch, whatever fits. Newsreader, Radio, Nortel. Back then, the undead were repelled by the local couple Henry and Margaret Vargott. Panel 3. We hit the present. In the swampy woods outside town at night, the Vargots are back, advancing towards the camera. Probably largest panel on the page. It's kind of a badass action shot, but they're also moving into the late 50s. Got the same equipment, though it doesn't fit as well. Henry's hair has receded a fair way. Margaret's gone grey. Both of them now need glasses. Newsreader, Radio, no tail. After two bodies with neck wounds appear in the woods, the vampire vanquishing Vargots are back. Henry, did you apply the garlic mist, Marjorie? Margaret, yes, it's making me hungry. Title and credits, It Sucked by Nick Bryan and Dan Butcher. Page 2, panel 1. Widest view of them approaching a dead body in the woods. Margaret rushing away from Henry towards it. Body is covered in tiny leeches, and that huge manky neck wound, though they might not be clearly visible yet. Margaret, look! Panel 2. Closer up on Margaret, leaning into the body. She's looking at the neck, wound now right open and central. Not just two puncture wound marks, but properly ripped into, stringy flesh around the wound. Leeches all over the skin, too. Henry, off panel. Is it a vampire, sweetie? Margaret. It's so messy. Whatever happened to it happened to a clean bite. Panel 3. Extreme close-up of the face. Leeches sucking on the flesh. No dialogue. Panel 4. Margaret's face as she peers down at the body, looking unsettled. Margaret. Were there already so many leeches out here? Panel 5. Margaret turns back with a sudden jump at the sound of a scream behind her. Henry off panel. Oh! Margaret. Henry! Page 3, panel 1. Margaret turns to see Henry just standing there, pale and staring at her, as a huge, giant, terrifying leech sticks to his upper torso at the bottom end, where they have the attacking sucker there. It gnaws into his neck with his tooth-filled, circular, blood-sucking mouth. Injury already starting to look a bit like a corpse wound on the previous page. Blood trickling down his whole body, other tiny leeches visibly crawling all over his skin and armour. Henry. Newsreader, Radio, no tale. After police find the bodies of the Vargots, we ask, were the 90s a simpler time? Panel 2. Cruddy phone footage shows a vampire, still wearing the 90s merch shirt of your choice, literally being pulled open from inside to reveal slimy leech flesh. Extra teeth appearing to push its mouth wider into the circle and rip into its face. Newsreader, Radio, no tale. Where vampires are a romantic face for the true blood-sucking menace. Panel 3. Back in the present, Margaret Vargott, now covered in leeches, pale and wide-eyed, stares off panel at something horrible coming towards her. Margaret, small. No! Henry, no! newsreader, radio, no tail. Scientists warn garlic attracts leeches rather than killing them. Panel 4. From her point of view, the blood-dripping, sharp, tooth-filled mouth of the huge leech lunges at her face, filling her vision. No dialogue. End. Losing Face, writer Tony Vanrez. Page 1, 4 panels. Establishing shot outside the upper window of a suburban house. The rain is pouring down. We look into a young girl's bedroom. Sarah is in her late teens. She sits on the edge of her bed while she talks to her boyfriend on her smartphone. Extremely distraught, she covers one side of her face with her hand. I can't believe you're so fucking selfish. Inside the room, closer on Sarah, one side of her face remains completely covered. She clutches it more tightly. There's a knock on the door. Sarah. Fucking say something, Austin. How can you do this to me? VFX. Bang, bang. Sarah's mother. Sarah, open up. Your father and I are worried sick. You've been in there for hours. We can hear you crying. Panel 3. Closer still on Sarah. Tears are streaming down her face as her anxiety spirals out of control. Sarah's nails dig into the skin on one side of her face. She draws blood. Her room door is still in view. Sarah. You arsehole. Why don't you just tell me you had it? I can feel them sprouting under my skin. VFX. Bang, bang, bang. Sarah's father. Sarah, this is the last time you've pulled this shit on us. You know your mother can't handle this stress anymore. I'm busting this door open. Sarah's mum. No, John, stop it. Wood breaks as Sarah's father forces the door open. Frightened, Sarah jumps up and drops her smartphone onto the bed. We still can't see the side of her face that she was covering earlier. VFX. Crack. Page 2. 5 panels. Panel 1. On Sarah's parents, they burst into the room. Her mother is visibly stressed and afraid, whereas her father is overcome with anger. Panel 2. Same shot on the two parents. Their demeanour quickly changes as their daughter's predicament is revealed to them. Upset, Sarah's mother covers her mouth and tears start welling up in her eyes. All of a sudden, Sarah's father can't hide the disgust he felt towards his little girl. Sarah's mother. Oh no. No, Sarah, baby. Big reveal on Sarah. The previously obscured side of her face is revealed to be tryptophobic. Nightmare. Countless tiny little holes have formed over the left-hand side of her face. When those little openings, we can see slick black buds beginning to sprout. In between the disgusting holes, small bumps are visible. More wet black beads are starting to burst through the skin. Ashamed, Sarah cries. Sarah's mother, off panel. No, not you too. Panel 4. Pull out to the long Dutch angle behind Sarah. You see the whole room and are being confronted by the parents. However, the focus is on Sarah's smartphone lying on the bed. The screen is still lit. Panel 5. Close on the phone screen, you read Austin's name on the display. The call hasn't been interrupted. Page 3. 3 panels. Panel 1. Match cut to Austin's phone. Close on this display as well, you read Sarah's name. Austin's index finger rests on the side of the phone. We see a familiar opening with a big, disgusting black bead protruding from his finger. Panel 2. Pull out to reveal more of Austin's arm. He's in much worse condition. Trophobia triggers are abound. The openings and growths have run up and down his arm. Some of the black beads have sprouted into worse blobs and branches. Full reveal of Austin's body. He is completely ravaged and deformed by the affliction. The openings and beads on his face are so large they push his mouth, nose and eyes into the unnatural contortions. A black bleed spouts from one of his eyeballs. Austin.
What a thespian.
Yeah.
What? Look at that.
Oh, it's a thespian.
It's incredible, that. It was like seeing Olivier. Well, hearing Olivier.
Yeah.
Derek Olivier, the plumber from
Honestly, you could go on the stage with that, Dan. Say it now.
Yeah.
Good. I'd pay to see that. It's like the vagina monologues all over again.
Talking. So tempted.
He said it. What me this time?
Sorry, V. I think that was worth it for the joke. Yeah, so I've read out a number of scripts there. including the winner, which we'd like to announce now. We all read the scripts through, and on Tuesday or Monday, we all said we got our picks and our favourites.
Yeah.
And we all messaged them to one another.
Yeah.
And we've picked it.
Yeah. Everyone at the same time, so we couldn't be influenced by each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've selected Losing Face by Tony Vanres.
Well done, Tony.
Nice work,
man.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. It was a hard pick out of a lot of them. It was fantastic. There was one script that I felt like it was written for Vince to draw or read through. The one with the vampires.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to make sure I read that one through.
Yeah.
It's called It Sucked by Nick Bryan.
Nick Bryan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice work. It was written to be a... I was thinking, what are we going to get through? And we got some absolute crackers through. Yeah. I was really impressed with them. Yeah, yeah, it really was.
Yeah, especially like we're talking. Yeah,
and I don't want to say, but nicely formatted as well. Yeah. They were made it easy to read, which is always important when you're writing a script.
Yeah,
yeah. It was interesting to see the different formatting on different scripts.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show we've been talking about horror and like how difficult it can be. But I think everyone who sent their scripts in achieved the right amount of, and there were lots of variety of stories as well. You know, there was a funny horror, there was disturbing horror, there was body horror, there was like just disturbing horror. You know, it's a bit of everything. So yeah, we really had fun reading all those through. So thank you very much to everyone. So what's the next stage then, Dan?
So I'm going to try and take the lessons that we've been learning on this podcast and try and draw it.
Lessons.
Well, like kind of. Not showing that my whole hand on the artwork and leaving it suggestive and you know, so I want to make this into a 3-page comic.
Yeah,
and
with that story as well, I think that one was really one that had like a big reveal at the end where you know which could be really sort of gruesome, like proper, you know, Cronenberg.
I think the story
sort of
hinges on that. Yeah. That has got to be delivered.
Yeah,
it might be the first panel I draw, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you won't see any of it until you see the complete thing. So we'll keep it posted.
I'm not going to be posting this anywhere. It's going to be sent straight to Tony Vanres, and then we'll go from there.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. So look forward to that.
Seeing it. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So it's good. But and until then, you've had that wonderful audio recording that Dan has done. Will do / hopefully.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about being on Audible? Dan, could be a career change, mate.
Yeah, you want to pay money? Audible, usually email address. Get in touch.
God,
you'll be doing the sat nav. Just fucking turn left, will you?
Just dang it, make a U-turn. Just like really pissed off.
Although Dan's sat nav will just be, just take a shortcut, mate.
Yeah. There's a massive long sigh.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
If you need a shit, get out.
Oh, dear. Yes. But anyway, do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Yes. I'm going to give a shout out to Cliff Cumber.
Yes.
Yes.
Unencumbered.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. When he said he's only a 15 minute podcast, I was like, great. I like that.
I don't want to listen to him talk anymore.
No, it's great. Cliff is really funny. Comes across really well.
Yeah.
And he spends the episode talking about John Tucker and John Tucker's artwork.
Yeah.
And why you should be reading that man's.
Yeah, he's a guaranteed future guest anyway, because he's friends with us anyway.
But I'm doing a job with him. But the favourite bit, did you see John Tucker's missus sent a message back saying, if I send you a copy of Sido, can you stop offering my husband sexual pleasures? Yes. And I think Cliff replied, I can't promise anything.
It was good. I listened to that today, actually. It was really good.
Yeah.
So made me go and,
it made me go and buy John's bundle deal as well on the back
of it. Nice.
I kept thinking about picking some up, and then I just thought, I'm going to do it. So, it was really, really good, actually. Really good.
Yeah. So look forward to more of them when they come out. I mean, Comics Unencumbered, you can find it on Podbean at the moment. And, it's definitely one we're going
15 minute chunks, really good. I can't wait to see what he does next, actually.
And
also another one I've got, a quick shout out to the Kickstarter Defend Milford Green by Samuel George London, that I have a few days left to go when you listen to this, So if you want to see the end of the Milford Green saga, back it and see how the story plays out.
Yes, and another Kickstarter just to shout out. They made their target, but we love the Reckless Hero Boys, and The Last Sheriff is still smashing it. And also, they've done some really good sort of stretch goals. I certainly pledged to one just so I can get a cool T-shirt, which is
funny. Yeah, I want a T-shirt.
Yeah, and they you know, really good value for money on their tiers and stuff. So, you know, it's, and if you haven't read that comic yet, we've talked about it quite a few times, so it's a good chance to get caught up to date on it. So I was talking to Chris Jenkins about it at Nottingham last week.
Oh, yeah. He was there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, stay tuned over the next couple of weeks, and please, please, please visit us at Thought Bubble.
Yep.
Which is it the 9th and 10th?
I think so, man. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
In Harrogate. We are going to be there. The Awesome Comics table is in the Ask for Mercy Hall, 93A. So please come and see us there, because we'll have comics. I will have a shiny new sketchbook.
Yes.
Ooh.
my first step into the world of sketchbooks.
Brilliant.
And I'm bricking it. So
just after it was like, I do a sketchbook, lads. Yeah, go on. Have you done your sketchbook yet?
It's Tony's fault. It's all Tony's fault. This is actually all Tony's fault. So
Buy it. It's very good. I've seen it. It's very good.
So I'll have some prints, and we will be doing a crazy deal. If you haven't got any of the Awesome Comics issues yet, there is going to be a big deal. I won't necessarily announce it yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be great value for money. So yeah, please come and see us there. I'm going to be obviously trying to sell stuff, but also I'll try and get some interviews as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the day. Where's your table, Tony? Where are you?
I'm not sure, man. I'll have to have a look. I shall announce it next week. But yeah, we're definitely there. And if you go over the road, there'll be a Hilda exhibition, which if you check out Luke Pearson's Twitter at the moment, he might be giving little teases to some of the original artwork that's not been seen before that will be on the show.
Yeah.
And we've got a few little surprises there and a few little giveaways and stuff like that. We'll certainly have some giveaways at the table, maybe some Hilda stuff and some gay stuff and some stuff like that. So pop over. There's a little crowd of us going up, actually. It's going to be a bit of a giggle. So and Thought Bubble is always social. And if you are up there, please message us and come and find us, because we'll be drunk in a corner somewhere, I suspect.
Really?
Yeah, really? With a couple of Nerf guns.
No. Actually, I'm quite glad I'm not near you.
Don't say it like that.
You know, I'll pine for you all weekend, Tony. You know that.
We're going to be there on Sunday. We're just going as visitors this year.
Brilliant.
So we're going to be there on Sunday. I'll be signing some covers of The Dead Next Door, which is
nice.
Luke Michael Copsey's new book he's releasing. So I've done the cover for that, so I'll be doing a few scribbles on that for him.
Oh, I saw that cover. That's a great cover, man. That's really
good. Did the cover for Vanguard 17, which I'm eternally grateful for.
Oh, yeah, of course you did.
Fantastic.
No, thank you. It was an honour.
Smashed it.
You know, so, yeah, we're looking forward. Never actually been to Thought Bubble, I must confess, you know. So looking forward to scoping it out and seeing what it's like, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we know, might be in a position to put a sort of bid in to try and get a table next year, but we'll see, you know.
Yeah.
I know it's a tough gig to get into, I know. So, you know.
They all are these days. They all are.
They are, mate. Yeah, we've discovered that this year.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. But,
you know, we're best friends with them now after speaking with Chloe. Yeah. So, you know. She'll never speak to us again.
You probably find your table's not there now.
Yeah, probably
in the car park.
probably no, but we can't wait for it. We'll be talking more about it next week, and I'll probably mention something else at the end of the show anyway. But any other shout outs? Does anyone get anything else?
Can I do one? Is that all right?
Of course you can. Yeah,
go for it.
I mean, just firstly, I'd like to just do a shout out to everybody at Nottingham last Saturday, which was superb. You know, we really enjoyed Nottingham and everybody we met there. It was really, really enjoyable. And again, it's the first time, because we've not done a lot of cons. This has been our first year of doing conventions, really. We're just testing the water on some. And Leamington, Nottingham, Oldham, places like that, just been absolutely brilliant, you know.
No, I've not done Oldham before.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Oldham is a fantastic.
Are there many Southerners go to it? I don't want to get beaten up. Yeah, okay, fine.
You'll be all right. You can all lie together. You know. I think
it
has a special pen he puts you in. You know.
And we shoot Nerf guns at you.
It's got all the shandy you can drink, so you'll be all right.
Oh, I'll be there.
Don't they like shandy?
But,
I do remember being, this is many years ago, and this is a pejorative word I'm about to use, but I remember going into a pub and asking for a lager top, and the barman looking at me and going, "What are you, a puff?" I went, "Well, I don't know, just wanted a bit of lemonade." Not that there's anything wrong with it, mate, but, you know, it's like one of them. Almost got drummed out of the pub for having a lager top. You know?
Yeah, it's a great event. And, you know, I mean, that kind of area bordering Yorkshire, you know, I mean, it can be a bit iffy sometimes. They still point at planes in some of those towns, you know what I mean? So you've got to watch yourself. But, remember staying in an hotel there once and they stole my towels, you know what I mean? It's that kind of a place.
I've been to Huddersfield. I know what you're saying, my friend. Yeah.
But it is a brilliant event, though. And I think I've mentioned to Vince before about Oldham Comic Con.
Yeah.
You know, it's just completely free as well. That's the, you know, that's my second shout out was actually to Dennis Whittle and the Whittle family. Because on the 26th of October, which will just have gone, we're doing a signing of Pre-Mortis in Comic Den in Oldham. Because we're having a Halloween sort of festival day, and they've invited us along there, so that'll be good. So a retrospective thank you to Den and Sarah and Amy and people like that.
Nice, yeah, yeah. We've met them a couple of times at shows. Yeah, yeah, they're great folks.
True believers, great people. Yeah, great people. Very supportive for the community. Yeah.
Yes. So now that we've got all of that good, it feels like we've got so much content in this week. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Two-parter, isn't it?
And some of it might actually be useful.
And the killer is...
I can't believe it was to be continued. No, I'm never going to do that on this show because it's more work for me, and Dan Butcher's already made it hard enough as it is.
Yeah, you've got to do two edits.
Yeah.
The swear word.
Yeah, but it's you, Dan. You know I'll let you off.
Yeah. It was for the joke. I mean, I'm not going to drop the C-bomb in.
Yeah, I know. It's okay, babe. It's okay.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, you babe. We're coming. It's like a big circle joined.
You get ready for the Valentine episode, aren't you?
Yeah. I am always ready for the Valentine episode.
Ready for that. I'll tell you it now.
Right. From one kind of love to another kind of love, and that's the love of comics. And we're going to recommend some stuff to you lovely people now. Who wants to go first?
Guest first, come on.
Yes, let's have the guest first. They can argue amongst themselves who wants to go first.
Go on, Dave, you go first.
All right, okay. So mine is, it came out, I think, a couple of years ago, actually. But I love this book, and I love it more for the artwork than the story, because it is absolutely divine. It's The Forbidden Brides of the Faceless Slaves in the Secret House of the Night of Dread Desire.
Oh, bloody hell, I've not read this.
Okay. Now,
which is a nightmare when you're trying to make notes for the show, as he's saying.
That's the title.
you won't be surprised to know it's written by Neil Gaiman, but don't let that put you off, because it was an old 1983 story that he did, and he kind of revamped it. But it's drawn by Shane Oakley, and I don't know if you're familiar with Shane's work. He did Albion back in the early 2000s.
With
I love Shane's
Liam
work.
Moore and all that lot. Yeah.
Absolutely love Shane's work. And he's... I would probably say, for me, he's the greatest gothic artist that we've currently within Britain. Definitely, it's absolutely gorgeous. This book, I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh, and he's such a great artist. And I kind of, strangely enough, it's a bit of a story. I met him years ago when I was a kid, and him and another mutual friend called Chris. They're a bit older than me, and they actually used to spend time with me and teach me to draw comics. You know, and they were in art college at the time. I was about 10, and we used to sit and draw together. So,
nice.
I hadn't realised, because obviously you lose touch until a few years ago when I got back in touch over Facebook, that he was still active in the community. Even though I'd seen his name on Albion and never twigged, you know, like you don't sometimes. But this book is brilliant. It's, just to give you a little idea, it's about a gothic writer who's trying to write a introspective, real sort of realist, you know, piece around living in a gothic world. And he can't help but keep falling into elements of comedy and farce. And he gets really frustrated. He goes, why can't he write this as a serious piece? And of course, the great irony is that the gothic things and gothic, it is campy, it is funny, you know what I mean? And when it's done well, it is amusing. And that's the great kind of irony. And he ends up kind of like, you know, fighting with, you know, his dead brother, and there's talking ravens and all this stuff. But the artwork is, Vince particularly, I think you would love this, man. You would absolutely love this. Ooh. And sometimes I just sit and flick through it. It's beautiful. And he was selling some original pages a while back, and I just couldn't quite afford them, but I wished I had now. But yeah, I would recommend it to anyone, even if it's just for the artwork.
This is definitely on the wish list.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. Mine.
Nice.
Awesome.
H.
Well, I'm not going to be quite as eloquent or as articulate as Damien was, because I, as you know from the beginning of the programme, I hold my hands up and say I'm not a comic book reader. But that's not to say that, you know, I don't enjoy comic books when I do pick them up or I acquire them. So I acquired something on Saturday, which you guys will be fully, fully aware of, and that's the In Waves.
Mate, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. I started reading it. Actually, I should say the author. It's AJ. Now, I don't know if it's Dungo or Dundrago. I don't know.
It's Dungo. AJ Dungo. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely beautiful. And I kind of, before I actually started reading it, because there was, as you know, in conventions, there's always downtime. So there's a bit of downtime. I was on my own. I thought, I'm going to start reading this. And my initial, because I didn't read anything about it, didn't know what it was about. And the word In Waves made me think of how grief comes, because grief does come in waves when you lose somebody or, you know, whatever your grief is about. Well, that's exactly what it was about. So I won't spoil it, because there's essentially two stories running through it. Which is one story going right to the past about the kind of evolution of surfboards, and the other story goes from a little bit further in the past, but it's essentially in the here and now. It's in the modern times, and it is to do with surfing, with the waves connotation in there, but it's also to do with grief. And when I realised it was going to be to do with grief, I thought, this is going to hit me at some point. And I carried on reading. Thankfully, I put it down at the convention and carried on reading it at home, because when I got to that bit, it was like a punch in the stomach. It was so moving, that the whole dealing with the grief and the dealing with death and things like that. It was just, you know, the artwork is very simplistic, which is what I like about it. The two stories are done in two different colours, which is nice. One's turquoise, one's in a sepia colour, to give you that old feeling to it.
Yeah.
Very simplistic, very little speech in there. There's more sort of descriptive stuff in there. But again, it's incredibly succinct with the text in there, nice and simple. But the power in it is the sequence of the panels and the way it's done and the close-ups and then the pullbacks where you go into the distance and dealing with the kind of people around the grief and how everyone deals with it. It was so moving. I absolutely loved it. I devoured it, and I think I probably will read it again and probably again.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
To me, one of my favourite bits in that is, obviously I'm a big fan of the book, and I love, AJ's a friend of mine, and I actually genuinely think this is going to win some awards next year.
Yeah.
Is the first kiss between the two of them in the driveway, and it's told so touching.
Oh, it's beautiful,
God,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It really, and you know what? It has kind of inspired me because I mentioned to you before that I'm writing some short stories myself that are kind of slightly autobiographical. And it's kind of inspired me to, because at first I was thinking, is anybody going to want to read this? And I thought, do you know what? This is somebody's autobiographical story and people are reading it. So I thought, well, why not? And I actually contacted the author on Instagram and told him how much I enjoyed the book. And
he's very receptive, AJ.
Yeah, he wrote back and thanked me for, you know, and I said, no, it's my pleasure. And I said, I'm sorry for your loss, because it was really moving. And it's a very thing to be very open about it and wear your heart on your sleeve like that to discuss what you've been through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, lots of kind of kudos to him for dealing with it, but dealing with it so beautifully and eloquently as well. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah, he's a young guy, but he knows what he's got. There's a real level of sensitivity, but
totally.
he turns that into art, which is a real, real achievement. Yeah.
I need to get this book. It's the next one.
Mate, I'll have a copy for you at the Thought Bubble. Yeah, yeah. And it's a brick of a book as well. You could be
dead with
it, you know.
Yeah, but I soon devoured it because it's so easy to read. But I'm thoroughly reading it. I didn't just skim through it. I read everything, and some pages I had to read again, and some pages I had to read again because I was too busy crying. You know, so I had to go back again.
Yeah.
You know,
wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I read it on a long train journey, and now we're both experts in surfing as well, aren't we, H?
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. Although, never get me on a surfboard because I really would probably drown. It's just awful.
Well, on his after having met him out near near where he lives in LA, he sort of said, oh, you should give it a go. And I tried to go swimming where they were surfing, and it was just like getting hit by a rugby scrum.
Oh, God, yeah. I can imagine. No, I'm not very good in the water, and I'm only small. You know, I'm quite kind of, you know, I'm short and stocky, and I've got a bit of body strength, but I don't think I'd be any good.
Yeah. Right, who wants to go next? Dan, do you want to go next?
I can't really recommend my book because I went.
It's always you. It's always you that has this. Do you want to name it, or do you just want to describe what you?
I went on to the Comixology sound because we said, oh, let's get a horror book.
Yeah.
So I jumped on Comixology and saw this one. I thought, oh, Warren Ellis, can't go wrong. Yeah. And you can go wrong. So I bought Warren Ellis Black Gas from Avatar Press. And yeah, it was just unremarkable. I can't really. I don't think there's anything worse than just being absolutely unremarkable and not doing or saying anything in a comic. And it's just that's what it was. And I was like, oh, okay. Because it comes like of graphic violence and like sexual imagery. So yeah, that's like hallmark so of quality.
One click yeah. Buying.
You know, say when you put on a film, it's like this film contains graphic violence and like, yeah. Like yes. So great.
Yeah, drugs and sex, bring it on. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
You don't have much luck with these blind dips, do you?
No, not really.
You're a bit like me. I'm not lucky. I've always said if I fell in a bucket of tits, I'd come out sucking my thumb. Do you know what I mean? You're a kindred spirit.
Yeah, it's just kind of like a pretty, that's what it's a pretty bland zombie story. This couple go onto an island. There's a big kind of thing in the middle that cracks open and a gas comes out, and wherever the gas hits, they become like zombie-like. Near I was getting near the end, I was kind of like ended up thinking, oh, I'll just skip a few panels because there's nothing interesting.
Yeah, it's bad that, isn't it? It's bad when you do that. I've done that before now where I've just thought, I just want to get to the bloody end of this.
I should have realised that's a big fucking warning symbol. So yeah, there we go. So don't get black gas.
Don't get black gas. I'm sure that was one of those films they made, wasn't
it?
One of
the warning films we were talking ones. About. Yeah.
I had a bit of black gas earlier.
I was going to say, yeah, some of you ate, yeah.
It's usually my search terms when I go on adult video sites.
Oh.
That was a typo, Robert. Black gas.
Was it? Well, what's underneath it? Turbogram. Family dog.
Ginger bollocks.
Oh, Tony, do you want to go next? Come on. Go on.
Yeah, so I did The Living and the Dead. I went on the Comixology sale as well. And I went and read a book called The Living and the Dead, which is not your average horror book. It's by a guy called Jason. Has anyone seen Jason's work? He does anthropomorphic. They're a bit more than sort of stick figures, very sort of straight, upstanding kind of black and white work. Anyone seen it?
No.
He's a Norwegian cartoonist. He won a Harvey in 2002 and 2007. He also did a book called I Killed Adolf Hitler.
Anyone see that?
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. But it was $2.49. The Comixology Fantagraphics Halloween sale, 49 pages, black and white, like I say. Anyone who's read his books will sort of automatically recognise his style. It's simple, very sort of iconic anthropomorphic stuff. It's got a real dark humour of idiosyncratic type wit. Do you know what I mean? Really sort of individual. If I was going to put it on a shelf, I'd put it somewhere between Charles Burns, Stan Sakai, and maybe Seth, if you know Seth. His stuff. It's solidly in the Fantagraphics wheelhouse, if you see what I mean. It's got that sort of not quite underground, but it's got that sort of indie feel to it. Often not the most action-packed, but quite... it draws you in nonetheless. I find him quite a fascinating artist to read. It's done like a silent movie. So it's done like a movie from the 20s, but there's a lot of people wandering around. They look like they're saying stuff, and then you flash to a black title screen, and it's got what they're saying. You know, so a man walks up to a prostitute in the street, he clearly says something to her, and then you get a black screen that flashes up, says, how much? You know, it's like that sort of thing. So it's strange. It's, you know, it defies word balloons purposely in that way. Very clean, though. The line work is like lovely and clean. And it's a nice little sort of change of pace, nice little sort of palette cleanser for a DC or Marvel book or a big sci-fi image book or something like that. And it has a real sort of deadpan, funny style to it, which you're not quite sure is meant to be funny or meant to be serious. You know, it keeps you guessing. I would say it's probably set in the 20s, the anthropomorphic universe equivalent of 1920s era depression of somewhere like Chicago and New York. And there's sort of two main characters, one who is a sort of poor bloke who's a plate washer in a restaurant, and another lady who is a fairly down at heel streetwalker prostitute who gets beaten up on a cage for not giving a pimp enough money. The pimp looks a bit like a sort of crow, turns up in a suit, you know. It's interesting. So, but while they're going about their daily lives and struggling with the sort of money and just to the sort of daily grind of being in this sort of poor time, a meteor crash lands into the local graveyard, as it does, and the dead rise from from their graves, and little sort of animal hands come out of the graves.
Yeah.
And the disease spreads and people are eating people all over the place. It's up till then, you would be forgiven for thinking that this is an all ages book. It's not at all. There's a zombie eating a baby at one point in it, which you don't really see often in, you know, such a sort of cartoony style. But it's also conversely, often full of like funny moments. They're running off from a crowd, like you get The Walking Dead now, you get that sort of big sea of zombies coming towards them, you know. So they run away from them and they get in one door of a car and out the other side of the door of the car. And so the zombies all have to copy them. So they all sort of traipse through this car, you know, stuff like that. Bit funny. They run into an off license and grab a bottle of wine so they can go and drink when they're sort of, because they obviously can't afford wine normally in their lives. But the ending is not exactly what you'd expect. It really has a strange ending. Okay. Quite, let's call it horrifically romantic. I'm going to say.
Well, the first part, anyway.
So, The Living the Dead by Jason. Like I say, he's a Norwegian cartoonist. His real name is John Arne Satteroy. And he's won a couple of Harveys. If you go to www.fantagraphics.com, you can get a copy as well at Fantagraphics. I love Fantagraphics. They make some really great books. We don't talk about them enough on here. They are the leading light in this sort of book, you know, and they're just, you know, the building would fall over from the amount of awards they've won for their books and stuff like that. And they do cater well to the strange and the, you know, the diverse and that sort of thing. So, yeah, The Living and the Dead. Also, if you can't get that one, get I Killed Adolf Hitler because it's a cracker. Yeah.
Nice.
That's a nice one.
Okay, cool. To sign us off, a Kickstarter reward that I got. And this was a Kickstarter that I backed. Just purely, I just took a punt on it, really. I got the digital PDF, and it's a one-shot, 39 pages, and it's by Vera Green Tea. And I'm going to get this name wrong. I apologise. Kyla Vanderkloot. I hope I got that right. So
I'm going to call you Vincent Vanderkloot.
No. I've been called many things in my lifetime, a lot of them by you. But yes, this is a one shot. Going back to gothic horror in the true kind of sense, this is Women Do Not Creep by Daylight, which I just received just the other day, actually, as we speak, as a reward. And yeah, just got my PDF and just absolutely just devoured it. Cover to cover, nice, easy read. I will admit this is the first thing I've read of Vera's work.
She's a great man, and she's also the master of Kickstarters. She knows what she's doing. She just brought a book out through First Second, which is a cracker. I was looking at it in New York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, met up with her over there. Yeah,
nice. Well, this is a very accomplished little gothic ghost story. Now, in those sort of classic sort of M.R. James kind of sense, if you think of like some of the creepier M.R. James stuff, it's about two women join this. Basically, they're hired by the Lady of Castle Carrickden to be maids. They're inexperienced, but they need the money after a past tragedy. And the story focuses on the younger of the two, the daughter Kate, who is, you know, she's mourning. She's that sort of classic sort of, not tear away, but you know, she's creeped out by the house a little bit. And yeah, they soon find themselves sort of working in this castle. It's an old ruin, basically. And Kate finds out that there's rumours to be it's haunted by a ghost with a backwards head. and of course, in the classic sort of ghost story sort of tale, she decides to investigate this rumour, and you know, creepy things play out as the story goes on. I absolutely loved this because I don't want to spoil it or anything for you, because I think people will also just pick it up and read it in one go. One thing I will say is the art by Kyla is absolutely stunning throughout, because in order to get away with that, and we're talking like it's a period piece in the sort of, you know, if you imagine a Jane Eyre sort of Bronte sort of,
okay,
it's that sort of, you know, Gothic mansion. You've got to, if you're telling that sort of story, you've got to set the mood, and you've got to have architecture, and you've got to get the colouring and everything, and it's just awesome throughout the whole thing. I knew that this was a creepy house. Everything about it felt creepy, without it being cliched creepy though. It's not artwork that depends heavily on shadow. In fact, you know, I would say it's dark when it needs to be dark. There's not black inks everywhere. There's a lovely colouring style going throughout this as well as the lettering, which Kyla does herself as well. And you really get a sense of the period and the actual work at the same time, which you get character work built up, and then as the mystery plays out, and then the strangeness, and this is all in 39 pages. But and then there's a twist. Of course, there's a twist. There's always something with these sort of horror tales. There's some wonderful panels. There's one wordless page where Kate is after being outside for a little bit, she walks back into the house. And this fabulous panel, which made me look at, I had to stare at it a couple of times, because it is a proper horror movie, you know, a horror scene. And there's some sort of aprons hung up on a wall, you know, from all the maids and stuff. And she's walking past them, and she's on the far right of the frame. So she's almost walking out of frame. So the focus of the wall is these aprons. And the one in the middle looks like someone's in it, and it's hung up on a wall, but you can see hair sort of hanging down. You can't see a face. And it was one of those I had to take a double take, like, is that, you know, because there aren't details. I thought that's masterful sort of like ghost storytelling, which I think a ghost story in a comic book is quite hard to tell, to be honest. To really sort of spook someone out. But you know, I think this has all the hallmarks of great sort of ghost storytelling, which for me always works better when it's set in the past. I don't know. I think modern horror.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, man. Yeah.
Modern horror is quite is very tricky, isn't it? You know, because the advent of like mobile phones and things like that, you need to immediately take them out of the picture before telling your story.
Yeah.
But this one, writing, art, it's just beautiful. I absolutely loved it. So it was a joy. I mean, if this wasn't Halloween, this would have been my recommendation anyway, because it's a lovely sort of piece. So yeah, if you could, and Vera's done. She's done a few sort of spooky like books, I believe.
Yeah, she has. Yeah. She does that sort of gothic, you know, gothic fairy tale thing really well.
Yeah. So, and there's a page in the back of the book where you can see like some of the other like books she's got. If you love comics, check out what else we have. Well, you know, that's sign me up. So you can find it all at Green Tea Publishing. I'll put out some pages of this. I might post that panel that I was talking about just then onto the Facebook group, just that one panel, because it's not a spoiler for anything, but I think it's just a masterstroke of storytelling. And you know, for a writer to write that I think they're a good team, this team. So you know, hopefully they'll do something else. And yeah, I'm now on board the train of Vera Greentea's work. I know.
I don't know if anyone wanted to reach out to her on Twitter. It's quite well known that myself and Vera were a figure skating partnership. Yes. In the 80s.
Yes. So when we get her on the show, we'll talk to her about
hilarious.
How you
she's,
ruined
she's
that.
She's the best company. I'll tell you what. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So no, I'm glad I love that, this. Yeah, I love this. So it was brilliant. So yeah, definitely want to check out and more cool. So, especially around this time of year.
Yep, so, exactly.
There you go. Anyway, folks, that was loads of fantastic sort of comics to check out. I know I've,
can
I've
got...
Go on.
Can I just say something, sorry, before we...
Of course, man. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the Comic Scene Awards have come out today, and I see that there's a certain podcast on there that I think we may have scuppered your chances after this effort, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
congratulations, guys. Like, you know, honestly, I'm not just saying it. It's a brilliant podcast, and, you know, the positivity you bring, and I mean, that recent series around creating that you did, that six-part series... absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, we had real fun with that, guys.
It was brilliant.
I mean, hopefully we'll make that a sort of semi-regular thing, because it worked so well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's thoroughly deserved, guys. You really do deserve. I know you're up against some tough competition as well in there, you know, when you're looking at the the sort of rewards. And I believe there's a certain Mr. Esmond up for another award.
I don't know what that award is, to be fair.
I know what it is. It's new with his tasty toes.
That's the one. Yeah.
Tony Tasty Toes.
I need to give another quick recommendation, if you don't mind, Vince. Another quick recommendation Helena, if you have an animal, get Helena to draw it. Because she drew a picture of Sharknado that is currently on the wall in my front room.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant.
There's a lot of love in this room at the moment, guys. Yeah. I can really feel it. No, but you're far too kind, sir. Far too kind.
No, not at all, honestly. Well done, guys. You thought we deserved
it. Thank you.
Keep doing what you do, because you stop me from murdering people on a Monday morning in work. So
we've saved murder at the Manchester City Council offices, haven't we? To be fair,
yes, yes, you have.
We're saving lives as well.
Don't retire.
Across the country. Yeah.
We are true heroes.
Yeah. So if we've saved your life, then get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, you know, if there's anything you want to talk to us about or etc. We've got another competition at the moment, haven't we? Did we announce?
No,
we haven't. Yeah. We had two competitions at once. It sort of confused me. That's what it was.
The Don won the Rock at the Rock. The God,
oh,
didn't
of course.
They?
Yes.
Also, the postcard thing. You got to the end of October to send it in.
I've done mine today.
Brilliant.
So just quickly, do you want to talk about what that is?
So if you're listening to this, you send an A5 or a postcard illustration into Richard, and he's going to auction them off for charity, Little Heroes. So if you've got some Inktober stuff you've done, send it along to him. There's a web address floating around. Hope to get in the show notes. And great, we can get you out there and raise some money for charity.
Yes. Always brilliant. And also brilliant is our Twitter, @TheAwesomePod, where you'll find out about the next shows and whatever's upcoming, and we'll be retweeting or talk about whatever. They've got the keys to the car as well, so it's not just me. So Dan's usually quite good at promotion, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah, I've been on there a couple of times.
And you can also go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and like us there. Or if you just want to talk comics or just generally get involved with the fantastic community that has sprung up, you know, around this show, and it's nothing to do with us, it's the people themselves, and then go to the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk, where you can continue the conversation that we've had tonight, the good, the bad, and the ugly that we've had tonight.
Jesus. As each sort of major convention comes around, I've been putting up a post about who's going to be there, what you're going to be bringing along.
Yeah.
So there'll be a Thought Bubble one going up very soon.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice and telly.
Yeah.
So expect some more exciting stuff over the next few weeks from us as we finish off the convention season. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, helps get the word out and more people find out about great comics, maybe learn something, and occasionally wonder, the hell is this? Also, if you listen to us on any of the networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what else were we on, Tony?
Well, bearing in mind it's Halloween and it's the time of real horror, I've decided to choose the Pod Doomsday Clock Release Schedule podcast.
That is a horror show.
Is it ever ending?
Oh, fuck knows, man.
Is it ever ending?
It's actually right. Man. It just never comes out.
Yeah. Trouble is that, because I'm getting on a bit, I can't remember what I've read now by the time the next one comes out.
I know. Forget what's happened.
It's a very meta comic playing the time.
Yeah. That's Alan Moore's put a curse on you for reading it. That's what's happening.
Yeah. And from one curse to another, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. Or you can find me neveronanything.blogspot.com. There'll be something going up this week. Look out for it. There you go.
Nice.
Nice. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes.
Three updates this week. So.
Nice.
Cool, blimey. You are cooking with gas now, Dan.
You got a horror. I've got a horror story to draw now, my friend.
Yeah, fucking hell.
He's doing well on the latest issue, though, folks, so don't worry.
Yeah.
So, we had a sneak peek of things to come.
The thumbnails, I'm well along in it.
Yeah, it's looking good. Looking cracking. If you want to follow my artwork or just daily waffling, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. And if you go to Thought Bubble, I've opened my commission list. So
yes.
please get in touch.
And, I have got Vince's Man Thing right in front of me here.
Why are you?
It's brilliant.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You got the video stream enabled, Tony.
Yeah. Mate, I'll tell you what, though. I'd forgotten I'd asked you for this cheekily, but it is one of my favourite Man Things. I've got to tell you.
No, it's better than, no it's way. Better than Shut
my,
up.
Even better than my giant size Man Thing. But I was looking at it. I was just having a look at it before we came on air, and the little details you put in this, man, really nice stuff. Oh, I would read a Man Thing comic by you, definitely. It'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm working my way through my classic wrestling portraits that you're doing for me as well, Vince.
Oh, I'm enjoying them.
Talkers so far, they're brilliant. I've already got the next two lined up, but they're superb, mate. If anybody wants a commission, honestly, get them off Vince, because he's cheap and he's good. You know, I'm cheap, but I'm crap. So, you know.
I can vouch for that.
On that bombshell.
And with art as well.
Yeah. You guys are bloody brilliant. And where can people find you and your amazing art?
Okay. So, we've got obviously the joint website and social media. So, the website is art92.com, and that's all letters. There's no numbers in there. art92.com. And we're on Instagram as art92. And then me, I'm on Instagram as Penciling the Journey. And that's with underscores between the gaps. So Penciling underscore the underscore journey. And I'm on Twitter at Penciling the J. Dame.
I'm on Twitter at DamianEd666. DamianEd's all one word and just three sixes straight after it. And on Facebook, on the other one, on Instagram. I don't know what I am on Instagram. I think I'm Damien Edwardson Art, but I can never remember.
Yeah, I think
but
you are.
If you go to Art92, you can find our individual links from there. So yeah, I'm always around and about talking the usual shit. Sorry. I mean,
your intellectual conversation.
In my intellectual conversation. Yeah.
Which we actually heard tonight, so it's not bullshit. So there you go. So thank you very much for listening, everyone, and to our lovely guests. Go forth. Have a brilliant Halloween. Read a horror comic, no matter what it is. Just check one out and read it on Halloween night. We'll be doing the same. So until next time, from Dan, Tony, Damien, H, and myself, have a brilliant week. And what should they do, Damien?
Stay awesome!
Back of the net.
See ya.
Bye.
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 We walked for a walk, right? Because I hate just walking nowhere. So I said to her, you've got to have a destination. So we're going to walk to the next village. And we met this guy. It was weird. He was in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, no, here we go.
He had this little dog. And he goes, he picks his dog up.
Oh, goes, Jesus.
Look at
oh, Christ, I know what you're going to say.
This story.
Right, it's a weird fella. He's chatting away. A bit over friendly. Like.
Hello, Helena.
Hello.
Look at the jewels on that.
Oh,
look at the jewels on that, and like I'm going, like, okay, yeah, no, nice right. that. What do you say when you're proud of his dog's bollocks?
Keep walking, that's what you
nice
say.
Bollocks. Well, nice bollocks. Yeah. That's what I'd say. Bollocks.
Well, to be fair, I just got mine out and then went, look at them.
Yeah. I'll just pop one out. Just pop one out. Just so he feels a bit more comfortable.
It tastes as good as they look.
Mine's smell of lemon grass.
Dad.
Mine's smell of lemon grass.
Oh, lemongrass and ginger, that's because that's my shower gel that I wash my balls with, so my balls are like that.
Oh, Jesus.
Someone pointed out to me that a dog's ass looks like the end of a sausage roll.
It's like a balloon knot.